do you think has received the most plentiful and pertinent complaints? I don't think you'd guess it. Well, maybe you would if you were one of the people that sent in the complaint, but I don't otherwise think you'd guess it in a million years. When I said yesterday to you that Labour's legislation regarding leaseholds was the perfect example of a story that was important but not very talkable, not very sexy, if you prefer, I said it, as I say everything to you, in good faith. But you got very, very cross with me. The subject appears to be considerably more febrile than I understood. And you're about to find out why.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer has arrived in China for the first visit by a British Prime Minister in 8 years. He's due to meet business leaders before talks with President Xi Jinping on Thursday. Sir Keir has stressed the importance of rebooting Britain's relationship with China. But Luke de Pulford from the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China says Sir Keir should exercise caution.
It's massive cyber espionage operations and influence operations in the UK. It's biggest military build-up in history and threatening of Taiwan, so many other aspects to China's behaviour right now, which really necessitate that the UK has a bit more of a realistic position when it comes to engaging with them.
Roads in Devon, Dorset and Somerset remain closed this morning because of flooding from Storm Chandra. Dozens of flood alerts and warnings are in place across the country. Ministers have moved to defend a new support package for England's pubs and small music venues. Yesterday, the government confirmed plans to cut business rates by 15% from April. Hospitality leaders say the measures are inadequate and excludes the likes of cafes and hotels. But speaking to LBC, the Chancellor Rachel Reeves says conversations will continue.
We have listened to the industry. We have worked really closely with the industry over the last few weeks. The industry are concerned around the methodology that was used to provide those valuations, which is why we've put in this additional support for pubs and have committed to look at the methodology for both pubs and for hotels too.
The former Deputy Prime Minister, Sir Nick Clegg, has told LBC that ministers shouldn't rush into banning social media for under-16s. It's something that the government is currently consulting on. Sir Nick, who was a senior boss at Meta until last year, said that he suggested an idea that he believes allows for greater flexibility.
I actually advocated this to both Labour and Conservative ministers. And you have a ban which is watertight at 13. And you can make that watertight by having a age control at the moment that apps are downloaded. It's the only way that parents can control it. And then you force all the tech companies to say that from 13 to 16, you can only provide kids of that age with much, much more age-appropriate things.
And vets will have to publish their price lists as part of proposals to make the industry more transparent. The competition regulator found that pet owners aren't being given enough information about vet fees. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 31 at 10,176. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.14. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells. Patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland. A high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
iPhone 17 Pro, the most powerful iPhone ever, with the ultimate pro camera system. Get iPhone 17 Pro and save up to £432. Plus, roam freely in the EU, up to 25 gig. What's not to love? Search O2 January sale. O2, essential for living.
Ends 4th of Feb, £432 via £12 discount over 36 months on selected plans. Roaming up to 25 gig, then bolt-on required. Credit provided by Telefonica UK Limited. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Okay, I'm going to need your help with this. So I don't know if you were listening yesterday. Two things that you may have taken away from yesterday. Well, several things you may have taken away. But I talked about an addiction to drama, didn't I? And the difficulties that we have returning to normality. I don't want to be premature. Events in the United States of America continue to be profoundly alarming and deeply, inarguably fascistic. We will no doubt be catching up. I think Simon Marks is due to join us in the final hour of the programme, so we'll definitely be catching up with events there. And Donald Trump's pleas to people to be hideous towards the Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have in the last couple of hours been realised after she was attacked by a man who threw chemicals at her. So you can see what's going on. But the importance, is it, or the difficulty of coming back to topics that are relevant and interesting and important, but are not epochal. That actually, I might just dwell on that for a moment, if you'd allow me. It's, and I know you indulge me very, very much. You're very, very kind when I talk to you about the so-called difficulties of doing this job. Talk about first world. What is it you do exactly? Yeah, I come to work and then I talk and then I go home. And that's it, really. We've got a lot of building work going on in the office building at the moment, in the studio buildings. And you see these mostly chaps doing things that are just extraordinary, like, you know, climbing through holes into lift shafts and incredible stuff. Come the apocalypse. I don't know that there's going to be much call for people like me. Maybe if I write a few poems or something like that to keep us entertained around the campfire. But if you can't build stuff, then come the... I remember being in Marrakesh a million years ago. And I went into the souk, the sort of market area, the Medina. What's the difference between a souk and a Medina? Ilhan Omar, forgive me, not Alexander Ocasio-Cortez. More on that shortly. You have the stalls in the Medina. There was a bloke doing metalwork, literally melting metal in a bowl and making stuff out of it. And this was only about 10 years ago. I remember standing there. I was hypnotised by what he was doing, just thinking, flipping heck, that there is a skill that is, you know, the difference between a vaguely civilised society and a completely uncivilised society. What happened if we didn't know how to make things out of metal? Sadly, the most obvious thing you can think of is probably weapons. But doing actual metalwork, I've got no idea where I'm going with this either. But it is important, because I was thinking about the different natures of labour. So the difficulties of doing this job are not things that I expect you to stay awake at night worrying about, or indeed sending me support and succour via the various messages. What I do know is that the events that are huge are the easy bits to do. When you see the United States of America descending into fascism, when you see people being murdered in cold blood on the streets by officers of law and order. We've seen it in Beijing, and we've seen it in Tehran, and now we've seen it in Minneapolis. And I don't make those parallels lightly. You can tell from that simple sentence there, or indeed three sentences, depending on how you punctuate. We have seen it in Tehran, we have seen it in Beijing, we have seen it in Kabul, and we have seen it in Minneapolis. Forces of law and order, state-sanctioned forces, murdering civilians and citizens, entirely innocent civilians and citizens, in cold blood. That's without even getting into the abduction of children and the disappearing of people who have had the audacity to appear on the streets of the United States of America with brown skin. So that's easy, but you can't do it every day. And the challenge that the government has, of course, is, well played to Wouter, points out that the difference between a souk and a Medina is that a Medina is usually funky and cold. That's probably the best text I'm going to get all year, isn't it? I mean, no one's going to beat that text. If you don't get it, you don't get it. But if you do get it, you got it. Well played. I mean, absolutely well played. And yesterday I said to you that the government, which we're constant... I know, I've realised something else as well. In that I think I try harder to be positive about governments I don't like than governments I do like. I've got this weird, whatever the opposite of footballification is. So in order to prove how even-handed and fair I am, I will talk about regimes or administrations I don't like finally doing so. I think I was at my worst on that during COVID. I was so desperate for them to get something right that when it looked for 10 seconds like they might have done, I was all over it. When Rishi Sunak became Prime Minister, when he gave that speech that appeared to recognise the horrors that had preceded him in Boris Johnson's administration, I was all over it. You gave me a right old coating for that. 6 hours it lasted before he put Suella Braverman back in the Home Office, and you suddenly realise that all of your warm words... It's where the curse of O'Brien comes from, isn't it? When I say nice things about a Tory politician, they almost always go and prove that they never deserve the nice things that I said about them. I suffer from the opposite condition with the current government, and you're giving me a kicking for that as well. The idea that I've been gaslit or groomed into a state of negativity is obviously not fair, but I could possibly try a little bit harder to be positive, because there is good stuff going on. There are good announcements and good moves. I've just gone up in the polls, would you believe? I've just gone up a couple of points on the latest YouGov poll. And that is despite all the coverage being so bent and so corrupt, and the online lies and the hideous far-right propaganda, and all of the phenomena that we know are corrupting public discourse in this country and turning us into a population that is entirely relied upon to now vote regularly and repeatedly against its own interests. So you come then to the things that they do that don't immediately appear to be sexy. And yesterday's announcement regarding leaseholds actually is one of those things. Listen to this. This is one of the complaints that I got after yesterday's, or during yesterday's programme. It's from Kelly. James, I'm a big fan, but remember, if you want your message to be read out and it is vaguely critical or negative, that is the second best way to ensure that I actually notice it, as opposed to scrolling through it immediately onto the nicer ones. So, I'm a big fan, but second only to I love you, but you're massively underestimating the leasehold issue. You referred to people paying huge amounts to live, quotes, in their own home. And that's the point. It's not their own home. Leaseholds have been missold as home ownership when it categorically is not. You own nothing, only responsibilities. Stamp duty is levied, but stamp duty land tax suggests land or something is owned when it's not. Residential leases can include forfeiture, having to hand back the property to the freeholder when the lease runs out, or if you fail to do or pay for things in the lease. Freeholders have a payday when leaseholders are forced to renew the lease to avoid the property value falling. It plummets at 80 years and 50 years tenure. My lease extension cost me £236,000 for 90 years to be added on, but their regular payday is kickbacks to them and unregulated managing agents to do, quotes, major works. Think £100,000 to decorate the outside of a six-storey London terrace. And then there's the cladding scandal, and Kelly goes on, and many of you did, with examples of why this was a really, really important announcement. And that is why we are returning to it today, because we have to be even-handed, we have to be fair, and we have to recognise good news when it sits down in front of us. I think the maddest thing about the status quo, which the Labour government, and albeit this is good news, it's not in the statute books yet, and there will be resistance. You can tell that there's going to be resistance, because the Daily Mail have already started complaining about it, with a headline that will probably put a wry smile on your face. We'll find out, well, I'll tell you now, how Labour's leasehold flat reforms could deal a blow to pension funds. You can just imagine the editorial conference. We've got to find a negative on this. We've got to find a negative on it. They are reversing rules that are feudal. Rules that are literally, you know that phrase when people say, I'm going to get medieval on your ass? This is actually medieval. This is feudal in essence and origin, which means the Daily Mail are going to hate the idea that we try and reverse it and bring things up to date. So what I want to do is examine how bad it can be. What I want to do is examine how you have been affected by the status quo. I can't quite believe some of the stuff I was reading about what it represents. There's about 5 million leasehold properties in England and Wales. I think pretty much the only territories in the world where this anachronism still applies. About 70% of them are flats. The way it works is that the freeholder owns the building and the land beneath it outright and forever. And the leaseholder effectively buys the right to live in the property for a fixed period of time. Scotland and Northern Ireland have different systems of property ownership, and I don't want my listeners there to be or to feel alienated, because you'll be able to tell us how easy it is to do things differently. You pay ground rent for the land beneath the buildings to the freeholder, the leasehold homeowners, and according to Kerry's analysis and many of the other messages that I received yesterday, they can take the mickey on an industrial, in fact, I would go so far as to say, they can take the mickey on a medieval scale. I hope there are some experts listening. We love experts on this programme. Used to be unfashionable, but it seems to be coming back round again. I hope there are some experts listening, because I don't know what the origins of it are and why it pertains or why it has been retained in this country. I've got a theory. Would you like to hear my theory? When I first moved to London, which was best part of 25 years ago, would you believe? When I first moved to London, and I used to enjoy looking in estate agent windows, I still do a bit, but nowhere near as much as I used to, and dreaming of the day. I thought by now I'd be living in a mansion on King's Road. If I had any racist bones in my body, I'd be furious about the fact that all the nicest properties in Knightsbridge and Chelsea and all of those very salubrious parts of London seem to be occupied by extremely wealthy foreigners. That's the kind of thing that could bring out your inner UKIPper. But happily, I'm not. But when I started looking in estate agents' windows, I noticed things like a 999-year lease. And because I was in quite salubrious parts of London, these would be leases, I subsequently discovered, that would be owned by people like the Queen, or I think the Earl of... And this is one of those things that you have to pronounce in a certain way, otherwise the toffs will know that you're not a proper toff. I think it's the Earl of Cadogan. Or you might say Cadogan, and I'd go, I bet you say settee as well, don't you? And toilet. The codes that posh people have to keep the rest of us out of their ludicrous inner circles. I think it's Cadogan. The Earl of Cadogan. He owns, like, masses of Chelsea. He's the Duke of Westminster. Whenever you see a property in an estate agent's window that you think is for sale, because you also see things that say 44 years on the lease remaining. And I always used to think to myself, what happens when you get to the end of the lease? What do you get? Because they'd be on the market for, you know, £500,000 or something like that. And I'm obviously talking about fancy flats in Knightsbridge and places like that. You say 44 years of the lease remaining and £500,000. And you think, what do I get at the end of it? When I get to the end of the 44 years, what do I? And that's what Kelly's talking about. You get nothing. You get nada. You get diddity squat. Unless you give them hundreds of thousands of pounds more. Why would you buy one? 03456060973. Answer, because you don't really fully understand what it is that you're buying. Is that true? I don't know. It's utterly and entirely unjustifiable. Andy points out quite correctly that the Earl of Dartmouth has huge holdings all across the southwest of England. Made largely as a consequence of all the profits he made from inventing darts. I'm just occasionally worried about people tuning into the programme for the first time and either believing some of the in-jokes that we share on an almost daily basis, or B, not believing them and thinking that we've all gone start staring mad. What would be the preferable of those two options? So why would you buy a leasehold? And what happened when you did? But those are the questions that I have for you. 03456060973. And the ground rents... You are being rinsed, aren't you? And this has not gone properly reported because of that thing that I share with you every single day. Almost all of our media is dedicated to protecting the interests of wealth. So what does the Daily Mail do on a day like today? How Labour's leasehold flat reforms could deal a blow to pension funds. We should have not noted this earlier, shouldn't we? Whenever there is something that delivers epic returns to people for doing nothing, they always bring pension funds into it. Not without justification, because pension funds, of course, exist to make money out of money. It's what a pension fund does. But whenever they're trying to justify inherited wealth, I always remember the last Duke of Westminster being asked for advice, being asked for financial advice. I think he told this story himself. Or was it a caller to our show who met him and told us the story? I can't remember. But he was asked for financial advice because he was the richest man in the United Kingdom. And the financial advice he gave to this person that asked him for financial advice because he was the richest person in the United Kingdom is one of those little nuggets I will never forget. If I ever find myself in the final grip, in the claws of dementia, this will be one of the tiny things that I can still remember because it occupies a place in my brain that is ring-fenced. And he said, well, my advice to you would be, and he said it with his tongue in his cheek, albeit two plums in his mouth. There's not a lot of room left. He said it. He said, my advice to you, old boy, old Pip, old Spoons, my advice to you would be, have yourself an ancestor who was best friends with William the Conqueror. And people talk about equality and social mobility in this country. Those words appear in my consciousness like Blackpool through the middle of a stick of seaside rock. Have yourself an ancestor who was best friends with William the Conqueror. Throw in a side order of one of my other favourite topics or one of my other favourite sayings. Throw in a side order. They were born 3-0 up and they think they scored a hat-trick. And you have an understanding, I think, of where we should be going in our conversation about leaseholds. Because it's inherited wealth often, not always. It's inherited wealth that is weaponized to create ever more wealth. And it is sold to the cap-doffing, forelock-tugging British public as something that needs to be done. Because, if we don't do it, your pension could be affected. Whereas all it really is a cartel designed to allow wealth to grow ever greater at the expense of people who don't have any wealth. Final bit of the jigsaw, the argument I made some time ago, and it hit me at the time like a light bulb, and that there are loads of people, we're talking all the time about young people who wouldn't be able to afford to buy a home. And we suddenly realised they could afford to buy a home. But that post-financial crisis, they just couldn't afford to buy their own home. They were too busy buying a home for their landlords. So unless you could get a big deposit together, you wouldn't be able to get a mortgage. And if someone had a big mortgage, could get a big deposit together, they could get a mortgage and then get a tenant in to pay it. So all of the unfairness in this country is rooted in the distribution of wealth. And yet, I thought yesterday that this wasn't a sexy story, or even particularly interesting. Prove me wrong. Tell me how heinous this practice is. Tell me why on earth anybody would buy a leasehold property, and what happened to you when you did. 0345 6060 973. The policy, by the way, is that the ground rent will be capped at £250 per year. Can we also find whoever's paying the highest one at the moment? And especially if you got kind of ambushed by it. You were taken by surprise by it. 21 minutes after 10. I'm looking forward to this conversation in the way that I look forward to all the conversations that we have, which involve you educating me.
LBC. To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung der Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Hey dogs, yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box, fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
Ooh, how so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Oh, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It's 23 minutes after 10. Do I mention it? Do I talk about the thing that happens whenever we talk about landlords? And it's kind of happening a bit now. My phone lines are full, which is extraordinary, really, given that we're talking about leaseholds. But I think there's a slight over-representation of people who own freeholds trying to justify their own existence. And, you know, I don't want to say it's time to get the tiniest violins in the world out, but it's almost as if there's some jungle drums that kick in whenever we talk about the iniquities of the rental market and how ridiculous it is that young people are buying flats for their landlord when they can't buy flats for themselves. And I get inundated with landlords telling me how cruel I'm being and how unfair I'm being. And listen, there are some wonderful landlords in the world, okay? And I'm sure there are some great freeholders. I was a freeholder once, would you believe? I lived in a Victorian house in West London and it had been split into three flats. And the freehold was owned by the top two flats, and the woman on the ground floor didn't have a share of the freehold. How the heck did that happen? I've no idea. And we sold it to her. Looking back, she probably diddled us a bit, looking at what it could have been worth, but I'd have felt awful exploiting her over something that didn't make sense to me. So that presumably meant that when the house was converted into flats, the person that owned the house moved into the flat upstairs and kept hold of the freehold, which, no, it doesn't mean that. Keith's shaking his head. I think, as with motoring, I should probably leave this to people who know what they're talking about. Andrew's in Fulham. No pressure. What would you like to say?
I would like to tell you about my story when it comes to leaseholds. So
yes.
I had to get a leasehold because at the time, the only thing that we could afford was shared ownership accommodation. So it's supposed to be low-cost housing.
Yes.
And basically, my fault, I'll admit to this.
Sure.
We've let the lease go beyond 80 years.
As in there's less than 80 years left on it?
Yes, there's less than 80 years left on the lease. When that happens, it's basically a blank check. And there is a whole new there's a whole new calculation that just seems to just be like, well, we can just pull any figure out of the air, and that's what you're going to have to pay.
Or we take your house.
We take your house, or you can't sell your house.
Because
we're currently trying to sell our flat, but we can't sell the flat until the lease is at least at the beginning stages of being extended. Now, it's gone from... Now, neighbours of mine paid, I think, about between £8,000 and £10,000 to either add to 99 or to 125-year lease.
Yeah.
We are now... I am being charged £27,000 because it slipped under 80 years.
Then you've just got to find it.
Yeah.
Or you'll never sell your flat.
Or we'll get booted out of our flat.
Do you pay ground rent?
Yes, we do. I can't remember how much we pay. My husband dealt with that, and I've asked him, but he can't remember off the top of his head.
This is marvellous. You have a similar approach to financial management that I have. But it can't be that high, because if it was that high, you'd know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if it actually made you win. So some people are paying huge amounts. Do you understand or know whether or not the government's plans are going to change the lives of people like you as they stand?
Because
we're looking at a cap on ground rents, but there are other reforms. I don't know. It says it will give existing leaseholders the right to switch to common hold, but that sounds quite complicated, doesn't it?
It does, and costly.
But also welcome, because it's got to be better than what you've currently got, because no one's going to be able to say to the people that own the freehold, that's tough luck, you don't owe it anymore. The best case scenario for you is that a body oversees the transfer of leasehold to common hold and sets a reasonable fee, which removes what you've described as the sort of random and potentially very exploitative nature of it.
But it's not just that as well, James. You also have to pay for your solicitor's fees, because you have to get solicitors involved. You then have to pay for their solicitor's fees. You have to pay for the flat to be assessed for how much it's going to cost. And these are not cheap things. It cost me £660 to get the flat looked at and to get it valued, which was not the same as getting it valued for sale. So to get it valued for sale cost me about £500. And then I had to spend another £600 getting it valued for a lease extension. And then I have to pay for my solicitor's fees and their solicitor's fees.
Right, I'm thinking of Vimes's boots for Terry Pratchett fans. The other bit of this that I want to hear about is the costs when they decorate the outside. Have you been hit with anything like that, sort of communal costs for maintenance and decoration or anything like that?
Communal costs in our block, we are paying within our block, we're actually paying within our service charge for the hotel around the corner to have their windows cleaned.
Right, I'm going to leave that there, because we could be here all day if we start digging further into that, but I presume it's to do with common ownership or, I don't know, contracts or something like that, but it is obviously a complete Wild West, and the only reason why it's gone unchanged is because it benefits the aristocracy, the ruling class, and the possessors of inherited wealth on an extraordinary scale, and then it trickles down to all the people who want you to get the tiny violins out now because, you know, they're very good landlords or very good freeholders. And yes, there are some, but that's not really what the conversation is about today. 0345 60 60973 is the number you need to tell me why this is a brilliant move by the government, albeit that some people would like them to have gone further faster, because you know what it's like to be on the wrong end of the current rules. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has landed in Beijing as he begins the first prime ministerial visit to China since 2018. Dozens of British business leaders have also joined him for the trip, aimed at deepening trade ties. There's still disruption this morning on some roads and rail links in the southwest of England because of flooding. A major incident was declared in Somerset last night after Storm Chandra brought heavy rain. And vets will have to publish price lists for common treatments under government plans to make the industry more transparent. They'll also have to disclose if they're independent or part of a chain. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear, leaving most places dry with sunny spells. Patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland. A high of 10 degrees.
LBC.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Hello, mate. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
Yeah, I'm one of their biggest fans. I've got all the vinyl. First saw them at a tiny little place in Camden. Then as festival headliners a few years back. Oh, now that was special. So there's no chance I'd miss their world tour. In London, Lisbon and LA. Good thing I've been saving.
From down the road to across the globe, saving gets you there. Join the millions of people already saving with NSI. Visit nsandi.com.
Now, let me ask y'all a question. Are you ready to ditch the crowds and the cookie-cutter holidays? I'm talking quiet mornings spent by crystal-clear lakes, cruising across the vast landscapes of Canada and the U.S. at a leisurely pace, stopping at charming towns and saying howdy. Go deeper with littleamerica.co.uk.
If you want all the best stories to tell, Best at Travel will provide the inspiration. For 40 years, our UK-based travel experts have been creating tailor-made luxury holidays. We are real people, passionate about making luxury travel personal, helping create your perfect trip. Secure your 2026 holiday today in the Best at Travel New Year sale. You can speak to one of our experts or book online at bestattravel.co.uk. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. Atoll protected.
Lost World Play Barn. Dragon Castle Children's Farm. Jumping Pillows. Wallabies. Rocky Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn. Quadrapillar. Rowing Boats. Owl Displays. Meerkats. Honey Pot. Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, lemurs, Jungle Kingdom go-karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and cafes!
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 60 60973.
10:33 is the time. A little bit of scepticism greeted my announcement a little earlier in the programme that Labour have just gone up by a couple of points in the latest YouGov poll. And it ties in with that little thing that we mentioned yesterday about the visceral hatred of Keir Starmer that has no root in reason or rationality. You can be disappointed with him, unimpressed by him, but the visceral hatred that just looks like Twitter trolling, because it probably is, of course also drowns out reasons why people who aren't consumed by hatred and addicted to social media and terminally online might have sort of warmed up a little bit with regard to the current government. I have a listener called Nick who, unfortunately, is a little bit aggressive in tone when he sends in lists of things Labour has done and complaints that we don't talk about them enough. But that's okay. You know, I frustration makes people aggressive. But I'll read out the list that is culled, I think, in part from an interview that Sir Keir Starmer has just done on Matt Ford's rather splendid podcast. In fact, you can hear interviews with both Keir Starmer and Matt Ford on my rather splendid podcast, Full Disclosure, which you can get from the LBC app. So here's a list of what has been delivered. So you've got the thing we're talking about today, the ground rent cap at £250. Well, you can't now transfer to a common hold, Nick, but there's a consultation opening into making that something that can be done. There's also a consultation on banning new leasehold flats. They've stopped Musk using his AI technology undressing women and girls. They've tried. Growth is up. More renewable energy has been agreed. Resident doctors got a 28% increase within months. Three small nuclear reactors are being built in North Wales starting next year. The minimum wage has gone up. Many families have received £7,500 worth of free childcare. Breakfast clubs have been rolled out up and down the country. 5 million extra NHS appointments have been made. The non-dom status has been removed for many British taxpayers. Private school VAT has been brought in. The Hillsborough Law has gone forward. The UK Wealth Fund has been set up. Some train companies have been brought back into public ownership. GB Energy has been set up. A new border security command has been established. A strategic defence review within the first year. The football governance sentencing reviews, legislation to bring down the cost of school uniforms, making it easier to prosecute shoplifters if they are shoplifting less than £200 worth of goods, extending the vote to 16 and 17 year olds, an ethics and integrity commission designed to undo some of the damage that Boris Johnson and his mates did to the role of ethics and integrity in politics, the removal of some hereditary peers, the protection of shop workers from threats and violence, an imminent ban on trail hunting, the removal of the use of offshore trusts to avoid inheritance tax, the restoration of mandatory housing targets, and he could and often does go on, and I share that happily. Because which of those subjects would lend themselves to a sexy phone in, I do not know. But yesterday I didn't think this would, and it does. Alec is in Cardiff. Alec, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James. Just adding some more detail from your previous caller. When we bought the house, we put an offer in, it was accepted, it's a dream house, blah, 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 needed to move quick.
Yeah.
But then the estate agent turned around, like, not quite late to the process, but well into the process. Oh, by the way, there's like a management fee, the garage is leasehold, whereas your house is freehold. So kind of already sucked in a little bit. Oh, it's fine, we'll just go for it.
Yeah.
And then we had to pay like £600 to said management company even, because we had to pay, because we're purchasing the house. For some reason, we had to pay for all these extra fees so we can have the house, like this management pack and what have you. So we did that. And then when we came, just showed you how you kind of like, you're really hooked in, you're kind of really trapped with these people.
I've not heard of this before. Do we know what the historical reason was for this? How come you had a freehold on your house but not on your garage? Is the garage attached to the house?
The garage is separate. It's got freehold flats above it.
Oh, okay. So someone else lives above the garage?
Yes.
And do they own the freehold?
I think they do, yes.
This is mad.
I know, it is bonkers. And then when we came to remortgage last year, or maybe the year before, whatever, we've obviously searched in different mortgage providers and found one which was about 600 cheaper across the two and a half year term. But then I had to, speaking to my sister's my mates, is all completely straight. He's not pulling the Cornwall and what have you. And I pay this management company like £400 for them to like review our new mortgage and so accept that we could take a new mortgage. And it transpired that we're only saving about £10-20 across the term. So I thought, I'm not going to give these guys any more money.
And you're paying them £400. You're cross about this, aren't you? I can hear it in your voice.
Oh, of course. I mean, this you're just scratching the surface. It's just. And as your preceding caller was saying, we get each year we get a breakdown of costs, and I'm playing like there's these flats up the road. I can't work it all out. It's like percentage contribution. We're finding like terrorism charges, insurance for flats.
Terrorism charges?
Yeah, there's a terrorism insurance charge. This is itemised on the you get a yearly breakdown of all the costs.
Right, in case the flats are targeted by terrorists?
I can only assume so, yes.
And this is in Cardiff, is it?
Yes.
Not Kabul? Yeah.
No, it isn't. I'm
just
no,
checking.
No, no. I mean, Cardiff is, has its times, but it's
of course it does.
Moment, you know?
And probably quite hard to get a mortgage in Kabul, but I don't know. You see, the problem is now, if I go off on one and talk about how outrageous this is, I could get a million phone calls saying, oh, you're so stupid, O'Brien. Everyone's got a terrorism clause in their mortgage. It's time you read yours. But I have to say, I'm a little bit surprised at this stage in proceedings.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
it's a management company, this is what's already emerging, you can kind of make it up under current legislation. You can say, well, I'm terribly sorry. If you don't like it, then you can leave. Or in your case, you can hand us your garage while staying in your house and finding somewhere else to park your car. Just out of interest, is that an option?
I honestly don't know.
No, I mean for you.
I'll have to
could you not park your car around the corner or in your mum?
Oh, apologies. Well, I could, but I've got my stuff in the garage, haven't I, you know?
We've all got stuff in the garage, Alec.
I know.
I've got three broken pressure washers, if anybody's in the market for three broken pressure. Yeah, and you just need to pay it. What would happen if you didn't? They'd somehow repossess your garage.
If they don't pay it, they give you administration charge. If you don't make a payment, you get like £60 charge. Like last year, it's really confusing. So immediately adjacent to my garage, where my parking spot is, there's a wall. And one of our neighbours, unfortunately, crashed into said wall and knocked it down. And it wasn't my wall, despite it falling onto my leasehold space. And then this company I had to deal with, I mean, you couldn't make it up. The number of calls I had to make back and forth, and
I believe you entirely because these organisations or companies seem often not to be set up to manage a property, but to maximise the returns for whoever owns that company. I mean, it's really murky. It gets murkier the more you talk about it, and I also find myself reflecting, not for the first time, on how naive nice people are. You know, the idea that somebody would be listening to this phone in and thinking, ooh, this sounds interesting. How do I get a piece of this action? I'm such an idiot. So I always think people like that are rare. And then you sort of realise that they're not. We can sit here sounding a little bit shocked and disgusted in perhaps or befuddled. Other people are listening, think, how do I get myself a bit of this sweet, sweet action? How do I? And those are generally the people whose ancestors came over with William. They're obviously not. There's plenty of people who haven't got two pennies to rub together who would dob in their own grandmother for a few quid. And that is what this kind of legislation appears to be repealing or seeking to repeal. No wonder the Daily Mail's cross about it. Tom's in Sutton Coldfield. Tom, what would you like to say?
James, pleasure to speak to you.
Well, it's a bit early to arrive at that conclusion,
days,
Tom. Yeah, carry on.
I've worked in the industry for about 20 years, both in the UK and in Canada.
Okay.
And Canada has the rest of the world has what we would call a common hold system.
Right.
The Common Hold and Leasehold Reform Act was brought in 2002. So I think there are, the last time I checked, around 190-ish that have common hold.
Right.
Whereas there's about 5 million leaseholds. So common hold, so the way the government have brought this kind of common hold situation in where from 2028 there'll be no leaseholds, that is the best thing that could ever happen to this country when it comes to blocks of flats.
Tell me why.
Well, because in a common hold situation, if you buy a common hold flat, there is no freeholder.
Yeah.
It's all owned by the people who own the flat.
This is the bit that I think people who, like me, are a bit ignorant of the detail will be surprised by. I think we probably presume, if it says leasehold in the estate agent's window and it's a block of flats, that it's owned by everybody who lives in the block of flats. You could live in the Cayman Islands and own that block of flats.
100%.
And you could never have visited it in your life and own that block of flats. You could, I mean, I don't want to exaggerate because that's obviously quite commonplace behaviour.
I mean, I could literally talk about this subject for years because there are so many issues within the industry that allow it to be kind of taken advantage of. I mean, you said to an earlier caller about the communal area decorations and things like that, how charges are brought about. So when any time you do some sort of like communal works, I'm sorry, I should really mention as well, the lease. So there's always a phrase in leasehold management that the lease is king.
Yeah.
And that's very true. So whatever it says in that lease that was written, let's say, 60, 70 years ago, has to be legally obliged. So if a leaseholder has any issue with anything their managing agent is doing financially, you can go to a first-tier tribunal, what's called an FTT. Now, I've been to many in my career, and the judges will always look at what it says in the lease versus what the managing agent is doing.
How interesting. So it can be both, it can be your downfall and your saviour, the lease, really.
Yes.
That's the law in a nutshell, isn't it? I mean, there's room for interpretation, but the tighter the text, the safer you are.
I think the solicitors have a lot to answer for in this when people buy flats, because in Canada there is a law that you have to be given the pertinent information about what potential charges could come down the line before you buy this, say, flat. Where in the UK, that just doesn't happen.
Do you know, I'm going to get a little bit airy-fairy, if that's all right with you, Tom.
Sure.
Because I talked about feudal and medieval, and there's a little bit of me that is thinking, why in this country are we still so backwards in this area, when, as you say, everywhere else in the world, certainly everywhere comparable economically or socially, either never had this in place or got rid of it. So you start with feudal, you start with medieval, you start with the Doomsday Book, and, you know, William the Conqueror carving up the country to hand packages and parcels of it that were previously owned by somebody else to his favoured soldiers and earls. And then I think of my own attitude to wealth and ownership. And I wonder whether it's partly because we're too deferential. You know, the solicitors can almost, and this is a lot of this is going to be subconscious, can almost take advantage of the fact that we don't think of ourselves as natural property owners. We think of ourselves as quite lucky to be buying a property, and therefore,
100%.
And therefore, we don't treat it like we would when, for example, we were buying a car.
I totally agree. And the amount of, I mean, in the 21 years I've been doing this, I've probably spoke to about two or three people who actually understood their lease prior to buying.
Wow. So there are people listening to this now, literally going, oh, well, the game's up. Or actually they're not. They're going, right, time to fight back, time to get the lobbyists moving. You've got 10 massive freehold owners making millions a year, and then you've got, let's say, 5 million leaseholders getting rinsed, many of whom are getting rinsed every year. And the way our country is set up, the power lies in the hands of the 10 freehold owners. They're the ones that are going to be able to mobilise. They're the ones that are going to be able to influence legislation and get their spokespit. They'll probably set up a think tank if they haven't already, or at least they'll call it a think tank. It'll be secretly funded. They won't tell us who pays their wages, but it will be planting articles in the newspapers about how pension funds could be affected by this, when all they're actually doing is protecting fruit machines they own that come up with 3 watermelons every time they put a quid in the slot.
Perfect analogy, Jeff.
Oh, you're very welcome. And you're right, it was a pleasure to talk to you, Tom. Is there anything you want to add, quickly?
Well, a funny story, actually. When you did your signing at the Glee Club in Birmingham, I was there, and I brought one of your books that day, and me and my girlfriend at the time hadn't been out in a very long time, because we have a young daughter, and we got very, very drunk, and I lost it in a taxi. that's all I need to ask.
Give your address to Eleanor, and I'll pop one in the post for you.
Beautiful. Thank you.
I mean it, seriously. Yeah, give Eleanor your address, and I'll pop one in a post. They're as rare as hens. Well, they're not, but they're still available in bookshops. But I think that's a qualification to get another one from the horse's mouth, as it were. 10:47 is the time.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
We heard from hundreds of pub owners who had their heads in their hands at the changes which would have left them without a business to run, without a pint to pour. But the government has come back for another try, announcing a wider review of business rates. Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury, Dan Tomlinson.
Listening to your show over recent weeks and hearing from the publicans who've been coming on, you and your programme on LBC does vital work in surfacing these issues.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan. Gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw. So you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's a lucky day, and you win the birthday draw. So...
Let's go, Cap. Hershey's bagel for lunch.
Woohoo! Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
Okay, do emails. Burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Right, before we do anything else, pay attention. This is important. Thank you, Matthew. Dear James, do you properly void all the water out of your pressure washer before switching it off? I.e., do you turn off the water supply and carry on using it until the water coming out of the nozzle is no more? Not doing this is a common reason for them breaking down. Ah. Well, one of them broke because I left it in the back garden for a month. In the rain and everything. Because I thought, Mrs. O'Brien said, when are you going to put that pressure washer away? And I said, well, I'm still using it, so I've left it out. And she said, but it's raining. And I said, well, yeah, but it's a pressure washer. How can it be damaged by rain? But I think it was, or something happened anyway. But the other one, you could be right. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about how to maintain and look after your pressure washers. 03456, I go with a Karcher every time. 03456060973. Tell me your funny pressure washer stories on WhatsApp, or you can text 84850. We're having all the WhatsApp, all the pressure washer fun that a man can have on the programme today. Do feel free to join in. In the meantime, we should probably talk about leaseholds. Rhiann's in Northampton. Rhiann, what's your funny pressure washer story?
Sadly, I don't actually own a pressure washer.
What? Well, it's because you spent all your money on your leasehold, probably, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Why did you pick up the phone?
It's a topic that I feel like really passionate about.
A lot of people do, actually. I think we called it right this morning.
Yeah, so when I bought my flat, I had no idea about service charges or ground rent or anything like that. It was only once I'd bought the flat and it had gone through that they said, oh, by the way, you need to pay... So, like, my ground rent isn't, I say, too bad.
Okay.
It's about £200 a year, and that's for my parking space.
Yes.
Service charges, on the other hand, I'm probably really fortunate compared with people that live in big cities.
Right.
But it's so unregulated. I pay about £2,000 a year. However, then 6 months into the year, they'll say, oh, we underestimated last year. Here's another bill for £1,000.
And you say, what am I getting for that £1,000, presumably?
Yes.
And they say what?
And they basically try to bury you in paperwork. Right. So they'll send you like a 100-page document with all the buildings that they look after, and you've kind of got to figure out which one you are and how much they're charging and why.
They're just having they're having an absolute laugh, aren't they?
Absolutely, and like the quality of the repairs they do is so bad. Our bin storage has been repaired 4 or 5 times because they send someone out, charge
and
us
do,
for
and
it.
And do they charge you every time they come back to fix the mess they made last time?
Yes.
No!
And like the back door to our building, the whole frame is failing. So when you close the door, it basically comes away from the wall. And you get scared of reporting anything because basically you'll get this is going to cost you £1,000 each. So do you really want this?
If I made you pick the best stroke worst example of, and I hate to put it like this, Rhian, but I think we can both agree it's an accurate description of them rinsing you, which would you pick? Which example would you pick from your time in this property?
I probably would say the bin storage door.
And that just, they keep coming back and keep charging you more and more. I mean, and I could come and have a look at it if you want. Does it need
pressure?
Does it need pressure washing by any chance? It's a great way to keep your bins clean. And listen, we can laugh, but what about the fire extinguisher? The producer says, tell him about the fire extinguisher.
Yeah, so they quoted after Grenfell, they needed to do a massive review of flats to do with fire safety.
Yeah.
So basically, they installed one fire extinguisher, which isn't even on the ground floor.
Yeah.
I think you have to go to the top floor to get it, and we were all charged £1,000 each.
How many people are in the block? How many properties?
Six
properties, so one fire extinguisher. So they got £6,000 for a fire extinguisher, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it, as far as you know.
No, I tried fighting it a couple of years ago. It went on for 6 months, and basically, I got no further, and then they were like, well, we need the money, so we're going to take it.
Good God. Well, I'm really sorry. I don't know what the light at the end of the tunnel looks like, but the legislation that is coming in will move slowly, as legislation always does, albeit from your point of view and the point of view of everybody who's not actually on the right side of this legalised theft, which is what it clearly is, will be in favour of the legislation. It's, I mean, too little too late. It doesn't seem a fair criticism, but we wish it could be quicker. Is the only natural response. Thank you for that. A fire extinguisher. I mean, this is a bit like, if I had come to work today and I hadn't slept all night, I probably would have done vet's fees again. Because it's such fun, isn't it, to do vet's fees. But it's pretty lazy. I mean, they're open goals. And the first time, we did it twice in the last month. But this works. I mean, the most outrageous things that have been stuck on your management contract. £6,000 for a single fire extinguisher using the horrible tragedy of Grenfell Tower to justify that, essentially, that daylight robbery. Unbelievable. This is from Johan. James, have you ever used a Karcher window vac? They're fantastic. My wife won't let me buy a pressure washer, so I have to play with the window vac instead. Ooh, they sound nice. And Johan adds, James, are you just... Oh, no, Eleanor adds, James, are you just trying to get a Karcher window vac complimentary? No, I can't accept any gifts like that at all. Oh, yes, I can. Sorry, I thought I was at the BBC for a minute. Tom's in Sutton. Tom, what would you like to say?
Hello there.
Do you know, we've had a Tom in Sutton Coalfield, and now we've got a Tom in Sutton. Spooky! Carry on, Tom.
It's all right. Sutton Coalfield is always, it's a bit of a rival. It always confuses me. Yeah, so talk about...
When you're on time, I think the phone line might be a bit funny. It's probably my fault for bringing pressure washers into the conversation. Zaim is in Enfield. Zaim, what would you like to say?
Yeah, good morning, James O'Brien. I am huge fan, first-time caller.
Top man.
And long-time listener.
Top man. Carry on. What's going on?
I bought a property on a leasehold about 2017.
Yeah.
And I was not told that there is a major work to be carried out onto the estate.
Right.
And my solicitor acting on my behalf, he did all the work and everything. He did not come back to me saying that this is how much you're looking at in 2 years, 3 years down the line. And also, there was a lease was started from 1989. So I bought the flat in 2017, and I should have been given a fresh lease. And I was not given a fresh lease. So I was my lease started from 2017, which means... it's two problems at the moment. I've got to renew my lease because I've got 87 years remaining.
Yeah.
And 2022, they hit me with the 2021, sorry, just after the COVID. They hit me with the 17,600 and something pounds bill, the major work they carried out onto the whole estate.
£17,000?
Yes, sir. £17,600
Just like out of the blue?
Out of the blue. They were, I mean, we knew the work was carried out onto the whole estate.
What were they doing? What were they doing? Installing a helipad?
I wouldn't have a clue. All they did was like the lighting, the fencing on the gardens, and They didn't even do the drive, because there's a garage linked to the properties. And they come back with that. And the huge favor they tried to do to us is that all the leaseholder, that's their contribution, and they will get 2 years interest-free credit. And if you don't clear the bill in 2 years, then you're going to hit with the interest. And I looked at it, and it was going to work out something like £4,000 on top of the £17,000 bill.
And I had
no choice.
So what did you do? You had to borrow the money, I presume, did you? Or did you have it lying around?
I had no choice to set up a direct debit with them.
I'm
paying over £700 a month on top of my service charge, on top of my mortgage, and on top of my bills each month.
Oh, mate, I'm really sorry. That stinks.
Yeah, it is. And I tried to fight it, and believe it or not, I couldn't get anywhere with them. They kept writing to me saying, if you don't set up with this direct debit, you're going to go into a major fine, this, that, and the other. So I had no choice but to sign up for that. And now I am struggling, literally hand to mouth, because I'm paying everything I'm earning, I'm paying back to the council.
Well, I hope that what they are doing happens quickly enough to help you, but it seems unlikely. And that's the council being the freeholder, as opposed to, I think, if I understood the same correctly, it's a private sector company doing the rinsing. But you can tell that this is long overdue and desperately needed, because the Daily Mail are trying to conjure up fury about it and make you think that it's a bad idea. How Labour's leasehold flat reforms could deal a blow to pension fund. Oh, yes. Angela Rayner's on the case, and she's already spotted the problem. She's warning that freeholders may resort to lawfare to prevent some of this legislation moving forward. In other words, they'll use their wealth to do things like the legal equivalent of sending Rihanna a 2-billion-page document about every property they own and every little bit of maintenance that's been done to it in the last 12 months, because she doesn't understand how they've ended up paying £6,000 for a fire extinguisher. So they'll go to court, they'll string it out. Fans of Charles Dickens? Anybody? Yeah, Jarndyce versus Jarndyce.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Sir Keir Starmer has landed in Beijing as he begins the first prime ministerial visit to China since 2018. Dozens of British business leaders have joined him for the trip aimed at deepening trade ties. Critics have warned moving closer to Beijing could anger President Trump and lead to more tariffs. But the former Tory Trade Secretary Sir Liam Fox says it's not realistic to avoid dialogue with China.
With China, there's always a balance between economic advantage, given the size of its economy, and security threat, given a whole range of factors, from the laws that they've applied on security, the disregarding of the Hong Kong Treaty, the threat over Taiwan, what MI5 tells us is a daily threat to our security at home. So these things have to be balanced.
There's still disruption this morning on some roads and rail links in the southwest of England because of flooding. A major incident was declared in Somerset last night after Storm Chandra brought heavy rain. Kemi Badenoch has promised Conservative members that she'll lead a party of serious people, not drama queens. In a wide-ranging speech this morning, she's criticised what she called the psychodrama of both Reform UK and Labour. Speaking in London, the Tory leader said that she's searching for the next generation of MPs to get Britain working again.
I was elected to renew and rebuild the Conservative Party, and that is what I'm doing. There is far too much time spent on who's jumping from one party to another. I acknowledge that the Conservative Party made mistakes, but we are working to fix those problems. Simply going and asking Nigel Farage to baptise you into Reform and wash away your sins, in my view, is not a serious response to the problems that the country has.
The advertising watchdog has told EasyJet to stop misleading customers about the cost of adding luggage. The airline claimed that passengers could add a large cabin bag for £5.99, from £5.99 rather, but the Advertising Standards Authority found that wasn't available enough across enough dates or flights. EasyJet has said that it's made changes. And history will be made this afternoon when the first woman to lead the Church of England takes up her post. Dame Sarah Mullally is set to be confirmed as the 106th Archbishop of Canterbury in a service at St Paul's Cathedral. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 38 at £10,169. The pound buys $1.37 and a euro 15. LBC weather, a dry and sunny day for large parts of the UK. Patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland with a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free, online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC, from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 4 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm going to try a tricky one next. The Treasury has unveiled support, as you know, worth more than, well, you may know, more than £80 million a year for pubs and live music venues after a backlash against plans to overhaul business rates. Some of the sums that people were being hit with were eye-watering. The more you dug into it, the less shocking it was, because it was a combination of relief that was imposed during COVID being removed, because we are, spoiler alert, we are no longer in the worst excesses of COVID. We're certainly no longer in lockdown, and businesses no longer need bailouts to keep them afloat as a consequence of being shut down by government legislation. So that came out, and then you had a scheduled recalibration of business rates landing at about the same time. So as I understand it, it was that kind of Scylla and Charybdis that was in danger of crushing the good ship Dog and Duck, the two things happening at the same time. But that doesn't alter the reality of the horror for publicans. So this is to be welcomed, although restaurants aren't included and other businesses will feel a little aggrieved. But the story that, almost as I turned the page in my newspapers this morning, the story that I saw sitting alongside it was a little more unexpected, perhaps. And that was about the number of people, particularly young people, that have given up alcohol. And, I mean, not just who've cut down on what they drink, which must be an even bigger constituency of people, but people who have cut it out altogether. And I have had this topic bubbling under for quite a long time, and I've been reluctant to do it for a couple of reasons, one of which is that I love pubs. And when I say that I love pubs, I mean I was in the pub last night. I really like everything that pubs represent. It's in my blood, actually. Well, I'm adopted, so technically it's not in my genes, but I come from a family of publicans. The O'Brien side of my family, or at least my father's mother, was a publican. She was the landlady. She had the license of a number of pubs in Leeds and its environs. Not my granddad. It was my grandma who was the publican. And I remember when I was little, in mum and dad's cocktail cabinet, they had some of the accoutrements that, looking back, must have come from the pub. So they had, like, antique optics in the pub, and some of the old ceramics, like some of the old Guinness toucans, or some of the old art that would have, obviously, at the time I wouldn't have realised this, but the must have come from the pub when it shut, and probably stayed in my granddad's, in a cardboard box at my granddad's, and then when he passed away, it got
it got transported down to Kidderminster. We don't have a lot. We didn't have a lot of it. I don't know whether any of my sort of half cousins came away with more booty, but we were a family of publicans. And then, of course, I was a newspaper journalist, which meant that pubs played an enormous part in our life. I was in the last generation, really, of newspaper journalists who could be reached in the pub. Mobile phones had become a thing by the time I finally convinced somebody on Fleet Street to give me a few shifts in a newspaper office. But by the time I'd kind of got an editor job, by the time I was a show business editor, mobile phones were absolutely everywhere, of course. But the pub that we all went to didn't have very good reception. You couldn't get a very good signal in there. So the my PA on the Daily Express would ring the pub, would ring the landlord of the pub or whoever was behind the bar of the pub to tell me that the editor was looking for me, and obviously my PA had said that I'd gone to the a bathroom, or that I was in a meeting, or that I was out chasing a story, when as obviously I was in the pub with a bunch of colleagues. And I'd get the message. He didn't even need to tell me. I'd just get the message. He'd hold the phone. He'd catch my eye, point at the phone, and I'd leg it back over the road. I'd leave my pint on the table and come back for it after putting the editor's mind at rest. What pubs in Leeds, asks Tim? The big one was the Market Tavern. And I'll double check on what the other ones were, because I don't want to get it wrong. But one of them has recently been turned. I was talking about one of them the other day, wasn't I? And it's been turned into a something smokehouse, if that helps. I'll double check and if I remember and remind you later. So I've always really liked pubs. And that sustained after I left newspapers, but it takes a big kick when you have children. You also, as you get older, if you have a couple of pints at lunchtime, you find yourself feeling a little bit sleepy in the afternoon, which is why I want to try, if I can, to marry these two stories together. Young people, and increasing numbers of men in particular, are shunning booze. 24% of adults said that they hadn't drunk alcohol in the previous year. And I have become, in the last 12 months, I've essentially become a weekend drinker, with occasional exceptions. And last night was one of those occasional exceptions. I had a glass of wine. Sorry, it was the night before I was in the pub, not last night. I had a glass of wine with my dinner in a really lovely local pub in Brentford. Brentford has a lovely selection of pubs, but they are dying out, aren't they? Not just in Brentford, but up and down the country. The number of, it was a Hickory Smokehouse, that was it, in Lawnswood. It was formerly the Lawnswood Arms. I love you, seriously. The fact that you've got that, you can remember that, and I couldn't, means that you must actually be paying attention to this bilge occasionally. So it was the Lawnswood Arms, which is now a Hickory Smokehouse up in Leeds. That was one of Grandma's pubs as well. But I'm part of the problem. So I was sitting in the pub on Monday night, because I occasionally allow my weekend drinking to extend into Mondays, especially if I didn't have a drink on Friday. So I'm sitting in the pub on Monday evening, and it was lovely. They had the fire going. It was just, the kitchen was open. It wasn't very, very busy. A couple of fellas having a pint on their own, with their phones, not with a book. There was one fella with a book. Probably four couples like us who were having a bit to eat, having a bite of dinner and a drink. But, you know, nobody was getting leathered. Nobody was sort of there to down as many pints as possible. It was a nice, calm social situation in a brilliant pub with an exceptional menu. And it was doing just enough business on a Monday night to justify being open. But what about a mediocre pub? Or what about a pub that's not smack in the middle of a densely populated area? Or what about a pub that hasn't quite got it right? Or what about a pub that doesn't have an open fire? Or what about a pub that doesn't have 30 different beers behind the bar? I just wonder whether, when I talk about pubs, I become part of the problem, not the solution, because I am doing the thing that I criticise other people for doing, which is, I'm suffering from in my day-itis. I'm suffering from a fondness for how things used to be. So my father was a newspaper journalist before me, and some of the milestones in my adolescence involved pubs, going to the pub with Dad for a pint, you know, and going to meet him after work in Birmingham if I'd got off the train from school to come home for the school holidays. And the first time he suggested that we go for a pint, I felt, oh man, I felt about 24 feet tall. I felt like a grown-up. I was only 14, and we went for a pint with the head of the West Midlands Serious Crime Squad, but that's a story for another day. I felt like a grown-up when my dad said, let's go for a pint, son. And then when we were living, we used to live on a farm on a hill in Worcestershire, and at the top of the hill was a golf club, and the golf club had a bar. And occasionally when I was young, we'd just walk up the hill together and have a pint in the golf club at the top of the hill. And these are real moments for me. So when you talk to me, or somebody talks to me about pubs shutting down, my immediate emotional, visceral reaction is regret and great sadness. And if I was wired a tiny bit differently and I was spending all my life online, I could probably get angry with Keir Starmer about it as well, even though it's got next to nothing to do with him. And I'm glad that the Treasury has found £80 million to help pubs and particularly music venues stay open. That's per year. It's not a one-off, and it's over the next 3 years for pubs and gig venues. It's only in England, but the government said extra funding would be freed up for Scotland and Wales to follow suit. And there will be complaints that they haven't gone far enough. And, of course, there'll be complaints that hotels should have been included and shops and retail. It's amazing how many socialists there are out there when the pips start squeaking, isn't it? Amazing how many people think that the government should be stepping in to prop up businesses that actually can't support themselves when it's a business that they like or own. I thought COVID was going to really change the picture of politics with regards to the welfare state and with regards to state intervention, when everybody applied for furlough, when everybody wanted a few quid from the government because times were so hard during lockdown and on either side of it. That was pretty close to socialism. That was the government taking money that had been raised from tax and giving it to people who needed it most. But it didn't change anything, did it? And nor will this. No one's going to come out of this experience going, do you know what? It turns out I actually am a great believer in the redistribution of wealth and in state intervention, if not even state ownership of pubs, let alone the public sector. But that's what they're all calling for now. All of these people, all of these trade bodies are calling for the opposite of free market economics. The precise and polar opposite of the free market economics mantra that has polluted and dominated public discourse in this country since Andrew Neil was editor of the Sunday Times. It's extraordinary how clear that is. Nobody likes free market economics. Liz Truss got all the way into Downing Street promising to bring in absolutely undiluted free market economics. So do you know what the phone-in is? I don't want to have this phone-in. For the reasons that I hope I've just articulated very, very clearly. But are we a bit dewy-eyed? I mean, you know my mate, I've got a mate, Andreas, who is a greengrocer. And he's got probably what is the smartest, coolest, funkiest greengrocer's shop in London. It's right in the middle of Chelsea, actually, in just those areas where I used to look in estate agents' windows and wonder what a leasehold was. But when he shut up shop in Chiswick, I remember him telling me this story a couple of times. Everyone went into his greengrocer's shop in Chiswick to say, oh, it's terrible that you're closing. I can't believe that you're closing. Some of them even went in carrying their Sainsbury's bags, which had their fruit and vegetables for the week in them. So he had this extraordinary moment where everyone was really sad to see him go, but they hadn't actually been into the shop for 6 months. Or if they did, they only went in because, I don't know, Waitrose had run out of beetroot. And so I think you came in last Christmas to buy some mistletoe. You wouldn't actually... We didn't care enough to keep it open, but we were really sad when it shut. And I just wonder whether we've got the same relationship with pubs now. You look at the number of people who've knocked drinking on the head or cut down significantly in drink. 39% of young men say they had abstained from alcohol. You hit the over 65s, it comes down to about 16%. So, listen, there are reasons to go to pubs that do not involve booze. But it's weird and it's hard to sit in a pub if you enjoy a pint and not have one. Do you know what I mean? It's weird not to chase that dopamine hit, which you can not really get from a dandelion and burdock or a pint of lemonade. So there has to be a correlation between alcohol consumption and the popularity of pubs. And I wonder whether... Ah, I really don't want to do this phone in. Because I think I'm right, aren't I? I mean, the pub, as we knew it growing up, is the same as the high street. It's had its day. That some will sustain, but they will be really special, like high streets. That some will sustain because some people will still need what an old boss of mine used to call the attitude adjustment centre. Some people need to have a drink for you know, reasons of addiction. And similar. So those pubs, which often seem to have flat roofs, a few of them will always survive. But are we unduly emotional about pub closures? Please tell me I'm wrong. 0345 6060 973. Is mourning the closure of pubs a bit like complaining or worrying about what was going to happen to blacksmiths when the motor car was invented? 0345 6060 973. We have, as a people, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing, we have moved on from the age of the pub. I spend a lot of time in Ireland, and some of the and this was true in England as well. Some of the pubs there, so you'd have like 8 customers. It would be one house in a village where someone brewed beer. And it became a de facto pub, so that, you know, everybody drank every day. And that's A, not very good for you, and B, not true anymore. So we no longer live in a country where everybody drinks every day. We no longer live in a country where everybody drinks at all. We no longer live in a country where alcohol consumption is intrinsic and central to our sort of cultural sense of self. So we no longer need pubs. Is the commitment to the pub, the British or the English commitment to the pub, out of date, anachronistic, and daft? 0345 6060 973. It's 20 minutes past 11. Please, please, tell me that I'm wrong.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
22 minutes after 11. A couple of things I want to clarify. The first is that the non-alcoholic drinks market, as in the replacement drinks, is booming and huge. So of course you can go to the pub and have a non-alcoholic drink, and many people, more and more of us, are doing that. Lucky Saint is a decent pint of lager, and the Guinness, perhaps more than anything else, you could almost fail. Do you remember the Pepsi test? What was it called? The Pepsi Challenge. I did it once at Birmingham New Street Station, where you I reckon you could almost mistake the alcohol-free Guinness for the real McCoy. So that market is growing. I'm particularly partial to the there's a rhubarb gin that I think Whiteley's do, that if you mix it with a Fever Tree ginger beer, it's a really delicious drink that fools you into thinking that you're having a tipple. So that's clarification one, is that of course you can go to the pub and have a non-alcoholic drink, which isn't, you know, a bottle of Vimto. And number two is, this is the bit I'm uncomfortable with. I could give you a list of pubs now that I love, right? And I know most of the landlords in them, either in passing or quite well. And they're exceptional. So, of course, the pub will survive, but I think it will be like the high street. It will be the exceptional examples that survive. And, of course, when I say that, someone listening who's had to shut their pub thinks I'm calling them a rubbish landlord, but I'm not, because the cost of beer, the tyranny of the big pubcos, the reduction in the number of people, all of the factors that contribute to the closure of a pub could eventually dwarf the brilliance of the landlord or the brilliance of the landlady or the couple or the family running the pub. So please don't think I'm doing that. But when you consider all of those factors, is it a little bit, what would be a good example of something that we clung on to long after it was redundant? It's just a little bit like that, is that we're kidding ourselves. The world is turning, and pubs, most pubs aren't going to turn with it. Chris is in Melton Mowbray. Chris, what made you pick up the phone?
I'm a landlord, so, yeah.
Thank you for your service, Chris.
No problem. Well, what it is basically, yeah, I'm in a pub in the middle of a little village, and basically, what we've had to do, I'm having to retrain as an electrician to keep myself afloat.
So you're going to keep the pub open if you can and do electrician work on the side?
That's what it is. Yeah, you've got to adapt to, that's the thing. I mean, pubs have got to adapt. They can't just stay the way they were, really. You've got to, your food offering has got to be there to get people in through the doors, especially in a little village like mine, because you're not getting people driving to your pub to drink. So you've just got to offer different things, really.
And even that won't be enough for many, if not most of them. And it's not down to any single individual factor. It's like, I mean, you could talk, we haven't even mentioned supermarkets yet, and people who do still drink a lot drinking at home. So many different factors that contribute and combine to create an environment in which the pub just simply doesn't fulfil the role that it used to fulfil when you started in the trade.
Well, it all started, I mean, the downfall started in the early noughties, really, when they changed the rules about drink prices and sort of took away offers, and so university students all of a sudden couldn't afford to go to the pub. I used to run a pub on a university campus.
Did you?
And
I was at university in the early noughties. I don't remember any obstacles being put on our consumption.
They get brought in new rules about doing like happy hour offers and things like that. Okay. There was a drinking culture change that happened.
Which was for health reasons, and valid health reasons, but it wasn't very healthy for your balance sheet, for your books. How will you do it then? Will you just, I mean, you'll just keep open at night and go out and do electrician work during the day?
Well, Mondays and Tuesdays we close because you can actually be open, have a pub open, and be losing money.
Yeah, so
it's actually saving money by closing the pub. So we do that, and then we open in the evenings, and then at the weekends open Saturday and Sundays. We've got a booming trade at the weekend, so you've just got to be open
Yeah, I like this. Times, I'm glad you really. Got. I'm glad you got on first, because of course there's a middle ground, isn't there, between 100% open and 100% closed. In between the two, you've got adaptation, evolution, having to move and change with the times. Do you want a free advert, Chris?
The Plough in Hickling, Nottinghamshire. Yeah. Come and visit us.
There we go.
Have a pie.
And what is on the menu? Do you do nice pies?
We do. We've got proper pies on, yeah. We do all homemade pies. We've got a canal by the side. You can go for a walk. Come and have a canal. The pie afterwards.
You're on. The Plough in Hickling. And it's there. It's gone. It's done it. It's got that thing has gone inside me. That weird emotional reaction to an economic story. This is a bit like the euro, isn't it? Why on earth does anybody care what your currency is called? You should care about how much it's worth and how much and stuff it can buy. No, how dare you take away our pound? I'm doing it. You criticise people for that, and I'm guilty of exactly the same thing when it comes to the pub. He says the name of it, describes the canal it's next to, and you picture your favourite canal-based pub. For me, it'd be the Lock in Wolverley. You've got, or the Grand Union in Kensal Rise near our first flat. You've just got, oh, man alive. But that's not, I don't spend enough time in pubs anymore to sustain them, to keep them open. And nobody else does either. The pies. So I'm having an emotional reaction to an economic story. That's what I'm trying to articulate. Steve is in Stonesfield as opposed to Stone, who's in Stevesfield. Steve, what would you like to say?
Well, I think if you do it right, the pub's very much alive and well. Our pub was in danger of shutting down during COVID, and so a few of us got together in the little village where we are in Oxfordshire and decided to see if we could buy it into community ownership ourselves.
You've almost gone bi-topical on this, because it fits in sort of with the conversation we had in the last hour about freeholds and leaseholds. So you pulled it off, did you?
We did, yeah. We raised nearly £500,000 through share sales. We were very lucky in that, because the story was picked up by the New York Times. We were very lucky.
I remember. Yes, of course. Yeah. And it's become a model as well. I mean, some people were already doing it, and other people have taken inspiration from you. And presumably, it's not being run to make massive profits.
No, it's run for the good of the village. And the village has really come alive since the pub reopened.
That's really interesting. So two things. You've got to be in a community where people can put their hands in their pockets and find £500,000, which is not going to be every village or every community, is it? We need
no,
to be
that's,
clear.
That's very true.
So you're smack in the middle of the Cotswolds, I think.
We are.
Right. Ah. Where exactly are you? Where are you near?
Well, we're near Woodstock, Charlbury. We're surrounded by gastropubs, but we did a survey at the start of the whole process, and that's not what people wanted. They wanted a pub where they could pop along, look, don't want to cook tonight, we'll go to the pub sort of thing.
So, I mean, I'm familiar with the Plough in Kingham. God, I'm showing you I could do a map of the country now with, you're near Soho Farmhouse, aren't you?
We are.
Right, so people
that's
who...
That's why we're surrounded by gastropubs.
Yeah, people who live there want a pub. People who are weekending there or holidaying there want an event pub. They want more of an occasion pub.
Yes,
and
exactly.
You've managed to plug that gap. But if you were obeying the rules of the market, if you were being judged commercially, you probably wouldn't be in business.
But we don't need to be commercial.
And there's the point.
Which is such a great thing.
This is what I was trying to say. The pubs that survive will be different. They'll be special. Or they'll be exceptional in well-established... What's it called, Steve? What's it called?
It's the White Horse.
The White Horse in Stonesfield?
In Stonesfield,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, man, the Plough, the White Horse. Imagine if all of these disappeared. And do you have any guest ales this week, Steve?
We always concentrate on local ales, so there's a brewery just down the road, Little Ox, we use a lot of their beers.
And that's, passing it on, moving it along, and because a big pub co, if it was still running a pub like that, would not be using little local breweries. 11:31 is the time. I'm right and I'm wrong. These are my favourite topics. I'm right. And feeling you get, even from the words, the White Horse. Do you know why they've all got names like that, Keith? You do you?
Well, pretend you don't now, and I'll do a hook and tease for after the news. Do you know why they've all got names like that, Keith? Oh, it's really interesting. I'll tell you after the headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's in China, where he says he's hoping to unlock opportunities for the UK. The Prime Minister says he wants a more consistent approach with the world's second largest economy. Amazon says it plans to cut around 16,000 jobs globally as part of efforts to streamline its operations. It's understood the majority of impacted roles will be in the US, but some job losses are expected in the UK. And Kemi Badenoch has promised Conservative members that she'll lead a party of serious people, not drama queens. In a wide-ranging speech in London this morning, she criticised what she called the psychodrama of both Reform UK and Labour. LBC weather, fog and ice will clear in the late morning, leaving most places dry with sunny spells. Patchy rain and hill snow for the north and east of Scotland, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
If you want all the best stories to tell, Best at Travel will provide the inspiration. For 40 years, our UK-based travel experts have been creating tailor-made luxury holidays. We are real people, passionate about making luxury travel personal, helping create your perfect trip. Secure your 2026 holiday today in the Best at Travel New Year sale. You can speak to one of our experts or book online at bestattravel.co.uk. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. Atoll protected.
Craig's never shown an interest in beekeeping before, but that's the sound of him buying 2,000 worker bees rather than doing his self-assessment. Craig, you live in a sixth-floor flat. The deadline is 31st of January. Less distraction, more action.
Don't be like Craig. Visit gov.uk/self-assessment today. Payment support may be available.
When you need urgent medical help, but you're unsure where to go, use NHS 111 to go from home to an urgent treatment centre.
Mr. Williams? Please come through.
Or a pharmacy.
Hello, pharmacist will see you now.
Or if needed, stay where you are and get a call from a nurse, doctor or paramedic. NHS 111. Call, go online or use the NHS app to be assessed and directed to the right place for you.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. Whether it's a curious kitten or a wobbly-legged puppy, they're cute. They're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. So the only thing you have to worry about is keeping them away from your favourite vase. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
At Kia, we have an award-winning range of electric cars for you to discover. From the compact SUV, the Kia EV3, and our latest hatchback, the Kia EV4, to our stylish new Kia EV5, the all-electric family SUV. Discover what driving electric really means. And if you order any Kia electric car by March 31st, you'll enjoy your first two services free. Search Discover Your Kia EV to book your test drive today.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 25 minutes to 12 and we are having a reluctant conversation about pubs. And the reason it's a reluctant conversation is because of that feeling that I get when earlier callers tell me about their pubs, and they are called things like the Plough and the White Horse or the Black Dog, which is one of my exceptional locals. And the reason why pubs have names like that, which I think I learnt from one of my historical fiction crime novels, are they called pictograms? Is that the right? Is that because they date back to the age of illiteracy? And they would be meeting points, and quite often stopping off points on roads, you know, on big carriage routes. And most people couldn't read and write. So if I said to you, I'll meet you at the Cross Keys, I'm looking for a sign of crossed keys, because I know what a key is and I know what a cross is. If I say I'm going to meet you at the Bull and Duck, I know what a bull is and I know what a duck is. So that's why pubs have names. Like, did it come up in Mystery Hour, or did I stumble across that somewhere else in life? I think it might have come up in Mystery Hour. That's why. And it's wonderful. It's just lovely. And I don't know why. It must be some sort of euphoric recall, mustn't it? You've had so many lovely times in pubs that you sort of feel a bit woolly and warm when you talk or think about pubs. And so when people tell you that pubs are closing, you feel whatever the opposite of woolly and warm is. Cold and sharp and a bit cross and uncomfortable. But, you know, think about blacksmiths when the car got invented. The world turns. most pubs aren't going to turn with it. And I think that's just true. How much of this 80 million quid that the government has found to help pubs over the next 3 years will go into businesses that have failed in 5 years or 4 years, I don't know. And at the moment, I don't care, because my feelings are overriding the facts. I'm doing the thing that I normally berate other people for, which is allowing emotion to interfere with reason. But for heaven's sake, we probably need to wake up to the fact that we ain't going to put this particular pantechnicon into reverse. And the further forward we go, the more barrels are going to fall off the dray. The more pubs are going to fall by the wayside. Simon's in Rickmansworth. Simon, what would you like to say?
Hello, James.
Hello.
I'm first-time caller, so
welcome.
Please, thank you very much. I mean, to your point, you know, I don't think it's, you know, the death or the doom of the pub, but, you know, my personal view is it's a reflection, you know, of what is happening in the retail landscape generally.
Yes.
Which
hang on a minute. But that proves my point, not yours, because nobody feels that emotional about a clothes shop closing. But when the pub closes, we feel something different.
Yeah, I think that is true, but the application of the change of the market dynamics remains the same. You know, my point is that, you know, we've seen a massive rationalisation in, you know, the retail landscape, but I don't think necessarily for pubs, you know, that's, you know, the sound of the death bell, but it's simply a reduction, you know, where supply has effectively exceeded demand. I mean, personally, you know, I love my local pubs and I love going to them. I'm hugely passionate about them, you know, so, but, you know, it is inevitable that, you know, the pub landscape will continue to correct itself.
I don't know that exceeds demand.
Yeah.
I mean, you an accountant? I don't mean that as a rude question.
actually, no. I work in marketing, but...
Because you're looking at it quite... coolly.
Commercially.
Yes, exactly. And you're obviously right. And it is a market correction.
Right.
But I knew that. And I'm describing a market correction. And what I'm addressing is the clothes that the correction is wearing when it appears in the media and when it appears in our minds. And the feeling I get when callers say the white horse or the plough, and it's not the same as the feeling I'd get if a petrol station was closing down or even if a sweet shop was closed. The pub has a role in our community.
It does.
That is a bit different from all other retail offers, but it is subject to exactly the same forces, which is the point that you're making.
It absolutely is. But I think, you know, to the point of your prior caller, you know, I'm also fortunate enough to have a second home in a village called Port Lowe. And, you know, to a point, it's a little bit of a shout out for the team that have done it. You know, and what we've seen there is the community have rallied round where St. Oswald Brewery were, you know, after multiple landlords went into the Ship Inn in Port Lowe, and effectively it continued to fail because there wasn't the level of demand that was required, you know, which is to my point. However, which is also to your point, which is that...
You sound like the Chuckle Brothers. To me, to you, to me, to you. Go on.
Indeed. Tennis. But the community really did rally around, and that included both locals and second homeowners, which is a topic in its own right.
Yes, of course.
And actually, the Ship Inn in Port Lowe, which is near Truro, has been saved. And, you know, the team who ran that, who were amazing, raised about £450,000 to buy it from St. Oswald Brewery.
Seems to be the going rate. And what happens to the people who invested in it? Do they get any return on their investment, or have they done it solely for the benefit of the community?
Well, I mean, from my own point of view, you know, and I am one of the investors, you know, I don't care about the investment.
No, I know. That's what I'm asking.
The pub open. Yeah.
You're not expecting anything back in return?
No, personally, but they are shareholders. But, you know, I think, you know, also, you know, we do see pub models working elsewhere. And
you're becoming the corrective to the companies that have essentially come from a sort of venture capital background and bought pubs with the intention of squeezing as much cash out of them as they possibly can, and ideally, for a lot of these business models, actually selling them but after the pub has closed down as residential property. So, you know, it pops up a lot on the programme, and I don't think it makes a sense. Simon, with his second home in Cornwall, does not sound like a communist, does he? And yet, here we are, essentially talking about the value of things that goes beyond money. Does anybody know why I always think of Swiss hedgerows at this point in conversations like this one? You should have been paying attention. You could remember the name of my grandma's old pub when I couldn't, so you probably know why I always think of... When I was at school, we had a geography teacher who told us, and whether it was true or not, I don't even want to know, just in case it isn't, that the Swiss government had sort of made it almost illegal to pull up hedgerows, even though it would make the farms more efficient and therefore profitable. So Swiss farmers would make more money if they could tear up their hedgerows. But hedgerows, probably before we even fully understood the role that they play in an ecosystem, they just look nice and they create a nicer air as you drive through the cantons. By leaving hedgerows there, it reduces the amount of money you can make, but increases the quality of life of the people that live there. That's what's happened in the pubs that we've heard of, both in Oxfordshire and in Cornwall. That these are not businesses that are going to be making money. They're not being run to increase the amount of money that the people running them can make. In fact, they're not possibly making any money at all in terms of profit. They wash their face. They break even. But they improve the quality of the life of the people that live there. And that's why the pub is simultaneously, to go back to the call before Simon, this is to go back to Simon's call. They are simultaneously subject to market forces and somehow separate from market forces. It doesn't make sense, but it doesn't have to. Paul is in Wakefield. Paul, what would you like to say?
I'm just so glad you've done this for them. Honestly, I'll fill you with joy right now. The pubs are dying. I've been one of the pubs since I was 14 and I'm now 41.
Wow.
I've just got my own first pub.
Congratulations.
We only opened, thank you so much. We only opened 6 weeks ago. We have been full ever since. And there is things like, you're right, a lot of people don't drink alcohol anymore.
Yeah.
But for instance, we had our quiz night last night. We were full, every table. We actually sell more 0% products than alcohol.
Wow.
And you make more money off 0% products.
Well, I didn't know that. I mean, the markup makes sense, I suppose.
Because
it costs less, there's no duty on it, and probably costs a bit less to make, but we don't need to go into the science of it.
No, no.
What are you doing right? Did you bring customers with you?
We brought no customers with us. The pub had been shut for 18 months and derelict.
What are you doing right, Paul? And no modesty allowed, all right? This is you're familiar with how this program works when I'm talking, so no modesty allowed when you're talking either, okay?
Well, I'll be dead honest. I've got an amazing wife that's really good at social media.
Yeah?
We get literally 200,000 views a week on his Facebook. We get a lot of community support, but we're making sure we offer things that people want. So people want a quiz. People want live music on a Sunday afternoon. People want homemade pies. People want a traditional Sunday lunch made in-house, not from a freezer.
Yeah.
But giving the offer and making sure the offer's right and listening to people. And I'm a traditional landlord. I'm on site every minute we're open. I talk to everyone that comes through my door. Tell me your opinion. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you want to see on his bar. It's making that offer right, and it's been lost because so many big breweries and commercial pubs have all been bought up, and it's all chainy.
But this is the point.
And the managers.
If we put eight fewer mushrooms in that pie, then we'll make 12 pence more on every one that we sell. So let's put eight fewer mushrooms in the pie. We've seen it happen everywhere, all over the place. But in a way, we're all agreeing, even as we disagree, because no village or town could support 30 pubs like yours when it once had 30 pubs. The ones that survive will be the ones that are doing something different, are doing something special.
More pubs could survive if they were offering social value rather than looking for profits, and the profits will come.
That's a lovely philosophy to have, actually. And I mean, it's a bit similar to my own view of life, but you're the one that's got your livelihood on the line. To test the theory. I hope it lasts. We'll get a free advert for you, I think, if you want one.
Thank you very much. We're the Tawny in Wakefield, Ossett Town Centre, a really small market town. Please come along. Homemade pies, loads of guest beers. We have three different ones on now. Some lovely, beautiful premium ales. Beautiful Guinness on tap. Loads of spirits, 0% wine, 0% gin, 0% cider, lager. Take your pick.
Fill your boots, why don't you?
I'll try.
That's the Tawny, TAWNY. In Wakefield. And, you know, there you go. And a wonderful landlord. And a wonderful landlady, which is pretty much the full set if we were playing pub bingo. It's 11:46.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC.
The BBC have done it again and have managed to offend their Jewish viewers, listeners and readers by omitting the word Jew or Jewish from coverage of Holocaust Memorial Day.
27th of January, Holocaust Memorial Day, a day for remembering the 6 million people who were murdered by the Nazi regime over 80 years ago.
Wrong, wrong, wrong!
The 6 million were the Jewish people. It is more than 8 million. How can you be so factually incorrect? As I said before, in the unlikely event that I'd ever had a senior position at the BBC, we have had a shocking, shocking 12 months. We are going to do this right. We're going to have absolute coverage of Holocaust. But even then, they're in Holocaust denial.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips?
Sometimes, pal, your best bet is not to bet at all. And BetVictor's app makes it really easy, simple and safe to do so. They've got lots of helpful features to help you manage your time and your spend online. But it also really helps that I can't find my blooming phone half the time.
Yeah, that does really help.
I don't even know where it is now. I can hear it, but I can't see it. Sandra?
Listen to Harry and please gamble responsibly. 18+ gambleaware.org.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead.
I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling.
Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 11:49 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm not even from Wakefield and I'm doing dry January, but I want to have a pint in that man's pub. There's a couple of messages there about the tawny in Wakefield. But, you know, the country's full of great pubs that will probably survive if they change with the times. Dale reminds us that they won't all do that. I've watched pubs do everything that this gentleman in Wakefield does and still fail. It's all about geography, economics of the said area. It can be a postcode lottery. And a lot of the pubs that close were unrescuable. Some of the pubs we've heard about today were only rescuable because they were bought by people who didn't need to make a profit from their existence. They provide what you might call social capital as opposed to financial capital. And this country is a place where social capital has been routinely and violently devalued since, well, it's 1979 if you want to get political, probably since Rupert Murdoch bought the Sun or the News of the World, if you want to look at it through the media lens. You should probably look at it through both lenses. There you go, like binoculars. But social capital, sale of council houses, devalued, devalued, devalued. Then you hit austerity, shut the libraries, get rid of sure stock, get rid of everything that doesn't make money. And you wonder why we're looking at some of the problems that we're looking at both socially and economically. Because social capital, and Paul makes a brilliant point. can turn into finance. Get the social capital provision right, and it might actually end up providing financial capital. And I think in the case of a beautiful pub, a perfectly run pub, then it probably will. Something a little bit weird just happened. Not like mega weird, but I was sharing with you, as I'm often prone to do earlier, some sort of family history and background. And this message came in while we were doing so from Jodie, who says, "You're wrong about pubs." I'm not wrong about pubs, Jodie. Everybody proving to me that you can have a successful pub by doing things very differently and specially is proving that I'm right about the fact that we need to wake up to the fact that the bog standard pub is on death row. Jodie writes, "I'm part of a team that has turned around the fortunes of a rural pub in the Peak District in the last year. We've created a space that feels like an extension of everyone's front room, a community hub similar to what the church used to be. It's a space where people feel welcome and safe to come on their own. We put on loads of entertainment from folk music to drum and bass." Should do a mashup, actually. That I'd pay to hear. "Our punters span all demographics, but the common thread is a really strong sense of community, collaboration and joy. It's been blood, sweat and tears, James, but worth every minute." And that is a message about the George Hotel in a Peak District village. It's in High Peak in Derbyshire, called Hayfield. And would you believe, because I'm not sure I've ever mentioned this to you before, that I used to live there when I was tiny. There's a weird period of our life before I was three, when Dad was moving from paper to paper. He's moving very sort of quite quickly up the ladder before getting his job on the Daily Telegraph. But I think he would then have been, he'd either have been working in the Manchester office of the Daily Telegraph, or he'd have been working for the Sheffield Telegraph. But we lived in Hayfield. I just got very, very faint and early memories of going swimming in Glossop and going for a toasted tea cake afterwards. So I've got Hayfield in my heart already, Jodie, before you told me about the success of the George Hotel. Jack's in Redditch. Jack, what made you pick up the phone?
Hiya, James.
Hello, mate.
I'm 27 years old, and I just think it's a massive shame that pubs are struggling full stop, to be honest, because they're so important to the communities. And
but it's your generation that's not going to them.
Absolutely right. I think it's just because we're not as social as we used to be honest.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do. I think we're all online a lot more. I mean, my dad always used to tell me, when he used to go to the pub, he used to just go.
Yeah.
Where he always used to find it funny when me and my mates were going to the pub, we'd have to text each other to arrange a time and all the rest.
You'd
of
just
it.
Turn up and you'd know somebody in there, and that happens quite quickly. I mean, I don't want to sound like your granddad, but if you did actually go to the pub half a dozen times, then by the fourth or fifth time, you would actually be saying hello to people and you would actually know people there. But yeah, you're right. Actually, do you think? And if it was already heading in that direction, lockdown would have pressed the turbocharge, I think, on that. Atomization, that lack of having to actually spend time together face to face when you can spend time together online.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, lockdown probably was a massive killer for them, but I remember going and sitting in a marquee and having a pint. But
yeah.
I think it's a massive shame.
It is a shame, but it's an emotional shame. It's not enough of a shame for you to phone all your mates up after this and say, let's all go down the pub tonight. I mean, it's a bit like my friend's greengrocer's shop. Everybody's going to mourn it and feel sorry about the ones that do go, but they're not going to do anything to keep them open.
Yeah, that's true as well. Even down to, the milkman's not as available.
That's the perfect example. It's the perfect example. Oh, it's such a shame the milkman doesn't deliver anymore. The milkman doesn't deliver because you're all buying your milk in Sainsbury's. It's there. And the generational angle as well is you can regret it and feel it, but you're not doing anything about it. Ricky knows what I'm talking about. He says, "I had the same as your mate, James. Once I put up the closing down sign, the amount of people who approached as I was sweeping up outside said how sad it is that you're closing down. But they'd never been in for a drink. The pub game is over except for the big players." I think we've disproved the last line of that. The pub game is over, perhaps, except for the big players and the very special small players. And it's the very special bit that's so interesting and has actually cheered me up a little bit from when I asked you to ring me at 10 past 11 this morning, and please, please, please tell me that I'm wrong. Jack, stay safe. David is in Aberystwyth. David, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi. I'm just kind of listening to this phone
That's a
call.
Very good start prior to ringing in. So not everybody does it, David. I can usually tell, but well done for listening to the programme that you're now contributing to.
Oh, I always listen. So but it's just that it kind of fired up some memories of the early days for me. I'm 63, by the way, so I'm going back to the late 70s
yes.
when I started going to pubs. Always with a bunch of friends, like four or five friends. And in 1978, for instance, we were 16. Too young to go to a pub, but the landlord didn't really mind too much. Probably thought that we were underage, but, you know, whatever.
This is fascinating. Please don't think I'm being rude, but no. I mean, what in a sentence, what did you ring in to tell me, or did you just want to have a bit of a reminisce?
No. I'm ringing to tell you the stages of the pub's decline over, let's say, the last 20 years at least.
Well, I don't know if I've got time for you to do that.
Well, I'll be brief.
If you're going to do all the stages...
Try and be quick.
Give me a favourite. Just give me a big one, because I've got something else I need to do.
All right. The first stage was the banning of smoking.
Yeah, maybe. And it felt like that at the time, but most people don't smoke now, and they still don't go to pubs.
They don't now. The Gen Z don't, no.
All right, I'll give you one more. One more stage on the decline of pubs.
What I'm trying to say is that every time legislation came in, that the landlords had to raise the price of their pint, of their alcohol they were selling behind the bar.
And that ultimately becomes, it takes us back to Richard's call about market forces. I think you're right, David. We overlook that simple fact. If they had kept track with inflation from the days when they were about 19p a pint, I think, and someone's going to double check this, so I'm not going to stake my house on it, I think you'd be paying about £1.40 a pint. If the price of a pint of beer had kept track with inflation from the days when it was 19p, it would now be about £1.40, and it isn't. You don't get much change out of a tenner in some pubs in London. I can hear the screams from the north of England. In fact, when Liverpool came to play Brentford, and they took over one of my locals, the one over the eight, which is just on Kew Bridge, you could hear the Scousers complaining about the price of a pint from about 5 miles away. It's a pre-season friendly, I think. It is coming up to 12 noon. It's Wednesday. That's the good news. It means PMQs is on the way, but Keir Starmer is in China, which means it's the Battle of the Deputies, which I think constitutes bad news. I know that David Lammy will be on the government benches, but who, Natasha Clark, will be on the Conservative benches?
Have you heard of a man called Andrew Griffith?
Is that a song?
Have you? It could be. Yes, Andrew Griffith is standing in for Kemi Badenoch because...
Is he the one that got into trouble? Downing with the police at Downing Street, or am I getting...
No, don't think so.
No, somebody else.
Not that I believe.
Okay.
But yes, he is on Kemi Badenoch's front bench. He does shadow business, so he will, I'm sure, be wanting to talk about the pubs U-turn. I'm sure that's going to come up. And the Chancellor's package that she unveiled yesterday for pubs, which the Tories think does not go far enough. I'm sure that would be a very easy one for him to do. However, with David Lammy in the hot seat, you might think that the Conservatives might want to go on jury trials. That's been something which has been troubling a lot of Labour backbenchers. And actually, we're hearing that the government are potentially willing to look at what might be able to be done on that one. So maybe they might try to press David Lammy into seeing if whether he might be willing to make any concessions there.
I was thinking of Andrew Mitchell.
Oh, no, you definitely can't go those two confused.
No, I know. Well, you can, because I just did.
You can.
But not for any reasonable reasons, except that they're both called Andrew.
Yeah.
And have two syllables in their surname,
in
my defence.
His name is Andrew and he's a Tory, and you know, there are very few of those, really.
He's been around. I mean, considering that the name recognition, as you say, won't be very, very high, he's served in various governments, Boris Johnson's, Liz Truss's, And Rishi Sunak's.
Yeah, that's right. Very loyal, a loyal party man. I don't think he'll be defecting to reform anytime soon.
You can't say that.
You can't say that. And you can't trust anyone these days.
Absolutely.
But I'm sure there will be a few reform defection jokes that David Lammy will be liking to chuck in there because, you know, it's easily done, isn't it?
I've got a story for you, actually. What's the name of the woman who hates all the brown faces in adverts?
Ah, Sarah Poachin.
She's going to be making a complaint this afternoon in the House of Commons about Storm Chandra.
Okay.
Being named after a Hindu god.
I see. Very good.
And also about all the brown faces that are turning up in Reform as well, which presumably drive her just as mad as all the brown faces turning up in Advert.
Yeah, she might be a little bit upset about that.
We will cross live to... That was a joke, by the way, for the avoidance of... and I know, just for the avoidance of complaints, she isn't going to make a complaint in the House of Commons about the fact that Storm Chandra is named after a Hindu god. But if she were to be taken seriously in her complaints about brown people being in adverts, then she would be very uncomfortable with the idea. It's on British soil as well. Storm Chandra should not be allowed to rain on English people because it's an Indian god, is the kind of thing that she probably says in private. Probably, which is also a joke. We will be crossing live to the House of Commons at the first opportunity as soon as... No, it's gone again. Andrew Griffith gets to his feet. As soon as Andrew Griffith gets to his feet.
I thought you were thinking about another joke.
For the beginning, no. I don't think about my jokes, Natasha. If I did, I'd never tell any of them.
And Ed Davey, of course. We always forget to predict him. I'm sure he'll be mentioning the Prime Minister's trip to China and about security concerns. I think that's what he would go on this week.
Trump, come on. I mean, the cold-blooded murder of a nurse.
True,
an ICU
absolutely
nurse
true.
On the streets
yes.
of Minneapolis.
However, he has been doing a lot of Trump questions recently, so I wonder whether he might want to mix it up.
I've got six shows on it. So, yeah, I mean, the appetite is there.
For sure.
People care passionately
absolutely.
About it. And it is one of the most important issues of our age. But what can Ed Davey actually say about it is
yeah,
the point.
And also what can be different, right? I think actually politicians across the spectrum have really united against ICE. Even Shabana Mahmood speaking to us yesterday on LBC.
Farage
was saying
hasn't.
That was absolutely horrific.
Farage hasn't.
I've not seen whether Nigel Farage has commented specifically
on
ICE.
And I'll say he won't have said anything that might upset Donald Trump. He described those disgusting comments about our military dead as not quite fair.
Yeah.
So I'd put a few quid on that if you want. So it's not everybody.
Most political parties.
But thank you.
Okay, most established Westminster political parties,
I'll do that.
I'm not sure it is. Reform an established party? It's definitely... No, I don't know. We're not sure there. But basically, the Lib Dems, the Tories and Labour have all united behind the idea that ICE have gone too far, that the shocking scenes we've seen in America are unacceptable, and I think every political party you'd like to hope would be uniting around that. But like I say, we might be seeing some comments from Nigel Farage on that soon.
Let's find out.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I start by echoing the Deputy Prime Minister's comments about Holocaust Memorial Day? Yeah. We must never forget. Yeah. May I also associate this side of the House with the condolences expressed by the Deputy Prime Minister to the family of Captain Philip Gilbert Muldoni. Yeah. I also offer the condolences of the House to the family of Lord Flight, one of my predecessors in Arundel and South Downs. He served in Parliament with distinction for more than two decades. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, after the Chancellor's U-turn yesterday, can the Deputy Prime Minister confirm that over 90% of retail, hospitality and leisure businesses will get nothing?
Yeah. Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, can I welcome the Shadow Business Secretary to the dispatch box and join him? I remember Lord Flight well when I arrived in this House. It's always a pleasure to hear from the co-author of the mini-budget. and a man who said that Liz Truss has the best plan to deliver for voters. Remember that? Of course, all of us want to see our pubs in good health and to support hospitality. That's why the Chancellor announced a £4 billion package of support. But yesterday, in addition, business rates for pubs and music venues will be cut by 15% this year and frozen for the next 2 years, and will review the methodology for valuing pubs in the future. I must say that contrasts with the party opposite, who of course saw 7,000 pubs closed under their watch.
Mr. Speaker, he wants to talk about experience. I spent 25 years building businesses, creating jobs. He spent 25 years manufacturing grievance. And if the party opposite knew anything about business, they would know this is too little too late. Our high streets, their high streets, are bleeding out, and the Chancellor's handing out They don't want to hear this. They don't want to hear this, Deputy Speaker. Our high streets are bleeding out, and the Chancellor's handing out a box of sticking plasters. They can't even U-turn properly. Mr. Deputy Speaker, a senior advisor. A senior advisor to Andy Burnham said yesterday the Chancellor just wants a cheap headline. Meanwhile, our high streets are being decimated. He's right, isn't he?
Deputy Prime Minister.
I've got to say, Mr. Speaker, he talks about business. We know what his plan for business is. This is the man who opposed the minimum wage and said it was, quote, simply something that legislators pass to make themselves feel good. Well, let me tell him, raising the minimum wage doesn't make us feel good. It changes lives. And Labour's proud of how we're supporting small business. And on small business, creating hospitality zones to cut red tape, greater licensing freedoms, very important, and tackling late payments. All of that supporting business. That's a heart cry to what small business saw before.
Mr. Speaker, you don't make young people better off by putting them out of work. Mr. Speaker, his MPs are already banned from pubs. Where next? Shops, restaurants, hair salons, that may not make a difference to him or I, but for many of them, they should back our plan to scrap business rates. But they haven't got the backbone to cut welfare to pay for it. And it's not just business rates, Mr. Speaker. Under them, the cost of hiring is up. So could he tell the House how much more does it cost to hire a 21-year-old under Labour?
Deputy Prime Minister.
He talks about young people. The party opposite left a shameful legacy. One in eight young people not earning or learning when they left office. We're investing a record amount in apprenticeships, which they had on its knees. We're creating talented excellence technical colleges for our young people, and Alan Bilman is doing a review on young people who are currently out of work. By contrast, they would freeze the minimum wage, oppose giving young people an increase. They've got nothing to say for the next generation.
Mr. Speaker, you can feel the Deputy Prime Minister's frustration. The Prime Minister's away. The business sector is away. And here he is, left behind Lammy, the designated survivor, having to defend the indefensible. And it's very clear he doesn't know the answer, Mr. Speaker. So let me tell him, the cost will be up £3,600 a year. Under Labour, businesses can't afford to hire. One in six young people can't find a job. This government is blocking people who just want to get on in life. People, Mr. Speaker, ambitious people like Andy from Manchester, having his dreams crushed by Labour. So could the Deputy Prime Minister explain why unemployment has gone up almost every month they've been in office?
Prime Minister.
Check 500,000 people in work more than a year ago under us. The Shadow Business Secretary is in no position to lecture anyone about U-turns, by the way. This man was Boris Johnson's net zero business champion. Now he opposes the renewable investment, creating jobs and opportunities right across the country.
Andrew Griffiths.
Mr. Speaker, the thing he didn't want to say is that every Labour government leaves office with unemployment higher than when they arrived. And there's a reason for that. They don't understand what it takes to be an employer. They don't understand business. They're strangling business with their red tape, and they're about to make things infinitely worse. So will he tell us his government's own estimate of the cost to business of the Unemployment Act?
Deputy Prime Minister.
I'm going to take no lectures from you on business. My father was run out of business under the Thatcher government. I know what it's like to grow up under a Tory government. And whilst we're talking about it, 26 Tory MPs and counting have already defected to reform, and now they're all counting down, Mr. Speaker, because today is 100 days until the Tory transfer window slams shut. It's going to be the longest and most disloyal transfer saga since Sol Campbell left Spurs. And the member for Clapton, I don't know where he is, has signed three white wingers in the past fortnight.
Andrew Griffiths.
Thank you. I don't know what's in his head, Mr. Speaker. It's our party that is getting stronger. And overnight, Mr. Speaker, we learned that the former deputy prime minister has got 80 names. On Sunday, we learned that the health secretary's allies claimed that he's got 200 names, and oddly, 50 of them want the mayor of Greater Manchester, who's not even in this MP. Mr. Speaker, they're supposed to be running the country, and once again, small businesses across this country will see that he didn't answer the question. So I'll tell him. £1 billion a year. That is the burden to businesses of their bill. So there we have it, Mr. Speaker. They've no answers for small business. There's no relief coming. They don't care about high streets. They don't care about hotels, restaurants, farmers, or young people. Won't the Deputy Prime Minister admit what the members behind him are thinking? That it's not the Prime Minister going to China that's the problem, it's the fear that he might come back.
Deputy Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, he's not going to get this gig again, is he? Let's face it. Mr. Speaker, I've set out our position very clearly. This was the week when the leader of the opposition told Desert Island Disc that Britain needs to learn to queue again. And Tory MPs have taken her quite literally. They're lining up outside the member for Clacton's office while they squabble about the damage that they did to our country. Labour this week is capping ground rents, cutting the cost of living, and rebuilding our public services. That's the difference a Labour government makes, and there's much more to come.
Speaker, Elmore Hall School is a fantastic multi-site provision supporting over 200 of County Durham's vulnerable young people with social, emotional and mental health difficulties. Their PAC site in Durham caters for 20 Key Stage 4 pupils, but SAN provision in Durham is at crisis point. With an extra school site and PAC extension, Elmore could offer more young people opportunities to thrive locally, saving thousands in costs for alternative provision and taxis. Will the Deputy Prime Minister arrange for the DfB Minister to visit the PAC site, and will they work with me to support the urgent need for additional school facilities and PAC accommodation so young people in Durham can access the education they deserve closer to home?
Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, I'm very grateful to my honourable friend. We're focused on fixing the SEND system so every child, wherever they live, has the support that they need to thrive. And we will continue our national conversation on reforms. We're also boosting investment into SEND. That includes £200 million to roll out more training for teachers and over £100 million for Durham County Council. I'm sure a minister would be happy to meet with my honourable friend and visit the site at the earliest opportunity.
Deputy Leader of the Liberal Democrats, Daisy Cooper.
Yay! Thank you, Mr Speaker. On behalf of my party, may I join with the Deputy Prime Minister in marking Holocaust Memorial Day, we will not forget, and also honouring the service of Captain Philip Gilbert Muldoney, who died on Sunday. Mr Speaker, whilst the Chinese regime still holds British citizen Jimmy Lai captive in prison, and whilst the Chinese regime continues to hunt down pro-democracy protesters on the streets of Britain with bounties on their heads, the British Prime Minister has gone cap in hand to China to ask for a trade deal on the promise of a super embassy from which the Chinese regime will continue to spy on us. The Chinese regime remains undeterred in its illegal actions against the UK and our citizens. So can I ask the Deputy Prime Minister to name one single consequence that the Chinese regime will face if they do not stop their campaign of espionage and repression?
Deputy Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, China matters, and ignoring them would be a dereliction of duty. We will build a consistent, long-term and strategic approach grounded in reality. I set that out in the China audit statement I made a few months ago. And that is what our allies do. President Trump, Macron, Chancellor Merz, Prime Minister Carney, all are visiting and engaging. We'll cooperate where we can, and I'm sure in areas like climate, she would expect us to cooperate, and we will challenge in areas where we disagree. That's the way that we deliver for the public of this country.
Daisy Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I note the Deputy Prime Minister could not name one single consequence if the Chinese do not stop their espionage and repression. Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Deputy Prime Minister has responded as if the world has not changed. With Russia waging war in Europe, with the Chinese hunting protesters and pro-democracy protesters on our streets, and with President Trump undermining NATO and the rules-based order which keeps us safe, we have got to act with urgency to strengthen our alliances with trusted allies in Europe and the Commonwealth, and we have got to ramp up defence spending now. Can I ask the Deputy Prime Minister, will he consider as a first step the Liberal Democrat plan to issue defence bonds to raise £20 billion in the next 2 years in order that we can rebuild and rebuild our armed forces and give British savers the opportunity to invest in the defence of our nation?
The Prime Minister.
I've got to say, I've been here long enough to remember when Labour left office, 2.5% we were spending on defence, and when they were in government with them, they cut it.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Does the Deputy Prime Minister agree with me?
And we're back in the room. 19 minutes after 12 is the time. David Lammy stole the joke that I had carefully prepared for you about being unlikely that we'll see Andrew Griffith doing PMQs again. But we will nonetheless be picking over the bones with Natasha Clark after this.
This is LBC.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box. Fresh food. Happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £500 off package holidays and up to 25% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
I'm Leah and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right and my GP referred me to CDC. Had some blood tests done and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It's 22 minutes after 12. Do we know why Andrew Griffith talks like this, Natasha?
Stop it, making my ears hurt. And the ears of all of our listeners. That was a bit of a painful listen, wasn't it?
Made Kemi Badenoch look like Aristotle.
It did. Baden it made not. Her look Baden better.
Baden not. Sorry.
Very good.
Carry on.
Yeah, it did make Kemi and the progress that she's made. She, obviously, as you said before, she gets better every week.
As she says,
doesn't she? Yeah. As she said before, yeah.
It made no one else said that.
No one has said that. No one has repeated it since. That was a bit of a deputy special, wasn't it? But not a particularly good one. Andrew Griffiths, I think it's fair to say, definitely will not be getting an off back. He was slow. He was flat. He was probably a bit nervous, I think.
Yes.
And despite being a politician who we've seen speak in the House of Commons many times and has been up on the round more times than, you know, we've had hot dinners, he clearly felt the pressure there from PMQs. And it is a big deal.
Do you think then we got
But he wasn't
him.
Very good.
Because he was, what did we get the job right? He was financial secretary to the Treasury when that ludicrous budget was announced by Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng. And Lammy hit him with that hard and early.
From the very get-go,
Somebody
I think he
knocked him off balance.
Yeah.
Sounded off balance, but we don't know what he would have sounded like in the absence of that rather good joke or rather good point.
I actually think he was probably going to act like that anyway. I think he was probably quite going to be quite poor from the offset. But yes, David Lammy opening with that joke. So nice to see the co-author of the mini budget. that definitely, I think, knocked him from the start. But Andrew Griffiths did have a few sort of things to say up his sleeve, talking about businesses, talking about jobs. We rightly predicted that he brought up business rates. Yeah. And he was a businessman, very successful businessman before he went into politics, talking about how the high streets are being decimated. But again, David Lammy had done his homework. And you can hear the Labour Party's argument on pubs starting to take shape, talking about just how many pubs closed under the Conservatives and how they basically did nothing to stop this decline too. And also comments about the minimum wage that he brought up. Some historic ones. I don't think I've heard that before from Andrew Griffiths, saying that he feels the minimum wage is simply something that people pass to make them feel good.
Mm.
So pretty damning comments there. Andrew Griffiths obviously he had some good points, but the problem was his delivery was so poor. I don't think anybody was really able to engage with what he was saying, talking about how you don't make people feel better off by getting them out of work. And David Lammy, again, had some statistics to just hit right back. 1 in 8 young people not earning or learning.
Hadn't they? They'd got their research in place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some of those questions they'd obviously expected.
Yeah, it just felt a little bit like a sort of cheaper knockoff version of PMQs, which may be, you know, apt giving Keir Starmer some China.
Daisy Cooper was very good.
Daisy Cooper was very good. And we thought that she might talk about President Trump But actually, she talked about China today, talking about how Keir Starmer, she says, is going cap in hand to China for a trade deal. She talks about the super embassy, which will, she says, continue to spy on us. And I don't think, I think David Lammy actually did outline a quite a good argument from the government there about why China matters. Ignoring it would be a dereliction of duty. And he listed, you know, Macron, Merz, all engaging with China. And I do think that many people agree that, that China is someone and a country to be engaged with. So it does make sense why Keir Starmer is making such a such a trip.
It's either our biggest, our second biggest export market.
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, it's not to be underestimated.
No, absolutely not.
And Germany, I think, comes in top.
This is a government that says they want economic growth at all costs, right? And you absolutely cannot ignore China. They are just too big to ignore anymore.
I think that pretty much covers it. Normal service resumes next week. Do you want to play a game? We've got a couple of minutes until the news.
Go on.
Okay, so this is defection bingo. I'm going to describe a job. I'm going to give you a job description, and you're going to tell me whether or not this person, who I'm not going to name, has recently defected to Nigel Farage's outfit. So this is people in Boris Johnson's government. Okay, so I'll give you the job description. You should just say true or false. You ready?
I'm ready.
A vaccines minister who briefly became chancellor.
Oh, yes, I saw this one myself the other day. Nadeem Zahawi.
Correct.
True.
Community secretary under Boris Johnson, later became an immigration minister under Rishi Sunak.
Community secretary. This is generic, right?
Correct.
This is generic. Okay, So I've seen him do it too.
Health minister under Johnson, before being promoted to...
Health minister under Johnson.
Wait, let me finish. Before being promoted to culture secretary in 2021.
Is that a promotion?
Yes, because that's a cabinet role.
It's true. Yes, it is. I'm not sure who you're talking about there.
Seriously?
No, as in, remind me who it is.
Nadine Dorries.
Of course. Sorry. Of course. Now, we all know that. We all know where she's gone.
Attorney General under Boris Johnson, who later made them Home Secretary.
Of course. That's Suella. Yep.
Northern Powerhouse Minister under Boris Johnson. Jake Berry. 6 months as political secretary to Boris Johnson.
6 months as political secretary. Ooh.
This is the hardest one.
Tough.
You could have just done true or false, but you've made
a rod
for your own back now, haven't you?
Yeah,
you've got to carry on naming them.
Who is it?
Danny Kruger.
Of course, Danny Kruger. Yes, he actually had a very small role in Boris Johnson's
government, didn't he? Yes, known to his friends as Dunning. Health Minister under Boris Johnson before losing her seat at the last election.
Before losing her seat. Again, it feels like so far away, this Boris Johnson government. I'm sure it's true, because I feel that there's a pattern developing here.
Maria Caulfield. Minister in the Scotland office under Boris Johnson, continued under Liz Truss.
Is it Matthew Offord? Is that his full name? It's Lord Offord.
Lord to the likes of you,
Lord
mate.
Offord. He's gone. He's now the leader in Scotland, correct?
Yes. Minister in the Northern Ireland office under Boris Johnson, and, it's a toss-up. What's
minister
more hilarious, this guy being a schools minister under Liz Truss or Nadine Dorries being a culture secretary under anybody?
Schools minister...
I'll give you a clue.
Oh, is it Jonathan Gullis?
Yes, it's Jonathan Gullis. That clue was a bit of a giveaway.
That was a bit mean, wasn't it?
So, Skills Minister, again, we could die of... Can you die of irony? We're about to find out. Skills Minister under Liz Truss and Boris Johnson.
Skills Minister under Liz Truss.
I'll give you a clue. They haven't got any.
I don't know this one.
Andrew Jenkins,
yeah. Of course, she was the one that, famously flipped the bird.
Government whip under Boris Johnson and Liz Truss.
Government whip. Look, it's obviously whoever it is. It's
going a bit obscure
now. It's going to be true. Government
whip. It is true. It's Adam Holloway. And finally, parliamentary private secretary for Boris Johnson and an assistant whip under Liz Truss.
I'm going to go with true.
Lee and Nikki. Or Nietzsche. 12 Nietzsche. So far. 12 and counting. Meet the new lot. Meet the nothing like the last lot at all.
Love it. People, when the old band gets...
Personally, almost as responsible as their new boss, Nigel Farage, for the mess that the country's in, but who on earth wouldn't trust them to sort it all out? And that's just the ones from Johnson. If you were to focus on the Truss government, you'd, I think, have more people now in reform than you have in Kemi Badenoch's shadow cabinet.
Yeah, possibly. She did make one good joke earlier in her speech where she was saying, at least I've got enough people to put in my shadow cabinet.
Yes.
There was a couple of good jokes this morning at Kemi Badenoch's speech. But you're totally right. And David Lammy, you heard him, gone about reform just there. They obviously clearly think that the sort of defections row and also the link to Liz Truss is still so strong, isn't it? How many years has it been since she's been in government? Are they ever, the Conservatives ever going to shake off that reputation?
Well, at least we know that she'll never defect. character reform, because they made it quite clear that
there was
Liz
one
Truss
person
and,
they won't have.
And Sue Ella Braverman were both far too toxic ever to be welcomed in to Nigel Farage's fold. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has arrived in China, the first Prime Minister to visit the country since 2018. He's hoping to unlock opportunities for the UK and says he wants a more consistent approach to the world's second largest economy. Donald Trump says a massive armada, bigger than the one the US sent to Venezuela, is heading to Iran. A US aircraft carrier group arrived in the Middle East yesterday as activists claim more than 6,000 people have died in a crackdown on protests. And around 16,000 jobs will go globally at Amazon as part of efforts to streamline its operations. It's understood the majority of roles affected are in the US, but losses are expected in the UK as well. LBC weather, bright spells and patchy cloud for most, some showers lingering in the far northeast. The south and west may also see showers develop, a high of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
I'm Leah and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
To be or not to be.
Right now we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20 terms at Ocado.com.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 33 minutes after 12. If you are, and frankly at this point in the historical cycle you should be, a student of the authoritarian playbook, then you will know what you do once the evidence that your administration or regime has done something unconscionable, heinous, egregious, becomes absolutely undeniable. Russia did it with the shooting down of the MH17 aircraft. Russia did it with the chemical attacks in Syria. Russia did it. Russia does it. Putin does it. Whenever the evidence that they've done something hideous becomes absolutely undeniable, you have an official investigation. You have an official inquiry. Anyway, Simon Marks joins us now live from Washington, D.C. to tell us the very latest on the shootings of Alex Preti and Renee Nicole Good. Simon.
Well, James, the very, very latest is that within the last few minutes, President Trump has taken to his social media account to warn Iran that time is running out if they want to avert an American attack militarily on their country, which is, of course, a fresh effort at distraction, because Donald Trump knows that time is running out if he wants to avert the formation of a circular firing squad within his own administration over the killings now of two American citizens on the streets of Minneapolis. Renee Good, the 37-year-old motorist, earlier this month. And, of course, even more problematically for the administration, the slaying on Saturday by Border Patrol agents of Alex Pretty, the intensive care unit nurse, who was perfectly legally engaged in the observation of Border Patrol operations on the streets of Minneapolis on Saturday, recording them on a cell phone camera, posing no threat at all to Border Patrol agents. He was also perfectly legally carrying a pistol that was legally permitted and that he had every right to carry. When Border Patrol agents seized upon him, disarmed him of his weapon, and then fired an estimated 10 shots into him. According to information furnished to Capitol Hill last night by the Border Patrol, body cam footage taken from the vests of some of the officers at the scene shows that two of them fired their Glocks at Mr. Pretty and indicates that there was confusion among the officers about whether he still had a gun or not. There is no evidence on the tape, at least none that was disclosed to lawmakers on Capitol Hill, that Mr. Pretty brandished his weapon at those Border Patrol agents, as virtually every single one of President Trump's senior lieutenants has claimed, but not the organ grinder himself. Take a listen to what happened yesterday when Donald Trump was in Iowa at a family restaurant on a campaign swing through Iowa ahead of the midterm elections, and see what he does the first time he's asked a question, the most trenchant and important question that he was going to face yesterday, by Rachel Scott of ABC News.
Mr. President, some of your own administration officials have labeled Alex Pretty.
By the way, this is ABC fake news, this one. She hasn't asked me a good question in years. I think a nice woman, but I don't really like her too much. Go ahead. What do you say?
So he whips the diners in that restaurant up against the reporter from ABC, Rachel Scott, a highly respected, serious-minded and fair-minded reporter within the White House press corps. He then goes to another reporter to try and avoid taking her question. She eventually gets another chance to ask it. Let's listen to that.
Do you agree with the assessment from some of your own officials that Alex Pretty is a domestic terrorist or an assassin?
Well, I haven't heard that, but certainly he shouldn't have been carrying a gun.
He hadn't heard that his own top officials had called Alex Pretty a domestic terrorist and, in the case of Stephen Miller, his deputy White House chief of staff, an assassin. Mm. And as you'll hear in this final clip of Donald Trump from yesterday, he immediately goes to the fact that Mr. Pretty was carrying a gun and appears to attach blame to Mr. Pretty for his own killing at the hands of the Border Patrol without exactly saying it.
We view that as a very unfortunate incident, okay? Right. Everyone, unless you're a stupid person, a very, very unfortunate incident. I don't like that he had a gun. I don't like that he had two fully loaded magazines. That's a lot of bad stuff. And despite that, I say that's very unfortunate.
So the President of the United States, again, piling on the memory of Mr. Pretty, the National Rifle Association, the country's most powerful pro-gun lobby, has now put out a second statement about the killing of Mr. Pretty, saying the NRA unequivocally believes all law-abiding citizens have a right to keep and bear arms wherever they have a legal right to be. And that is indicative of mounting fury within Republicans about the way in which this is being handled by President Trump and his administration.
It's like a cornered rat, isn't it? And more dangerous, obviously, but he's just pushing to see where he might find an escape route here. Is it going to work if I blame it on the gun? I'm going to distance myself from Stephen Miller. I'm going to pretend, I'm going to lie that I don't know what Stephen Miller has said, because of course he knows what Stephen Miller has said. The truth disappeared, as we know. It's never really been in the room. But that which lie is going to serve me best? And if I can't get a lie to float, I'm going to put the country on a war footing like Francis Underwood in House of Cards, because that way I can distract from the thing that I'm using to distract from the thing that was originally done to distract from the Epstein files. It's hard to keep up, isn't it?
Distraction upon distraction upon distraction. Look, the real problem that they've got is that they've ditched Greg Bovino, the
has he definitely
head of the Border
gone?
Patrol. They've I believe they were pulling him out last night. Certainly there are reports that he is losing his official title of commander and is going to be sent back down to the southern border from where he emerged. This is the strutting, swaggering head of the Border Patrol who quite literally has styled himself. I mean, in terms of the clothing that he wears, these long trench coats, very much SS chic, as Mr. Bovino has strutted around the streets of Minneapolis and frankly terrorized residents there. They finally appear to have pulled him out and sent the immigration czar Tom Homan into Minneapolis in a bid to negotiate with state and local officials there. But the biggest problem they've got is that getting rid of Greg Bovino is not enough, because there are mounting calls from Republicans in the House of Representatives and the Senate for Kristi Noem, the Secretary of Homeland Security, to go. And Kristi Noem put a statement, is reported to have told friends, this was leaked to Axios, the website, last night, that, quote, "Everything I've done at the direction of the president and Stephen," as in Stephen Miller, the deputy White House chief of staff and Donald Trump's de facto chief ideologue, who over the weekend called Mr. Pretty, first a would-be assassin, then he dropped the would-be and called him an assassin in a social media post that the vice president of the United States, J.D. Vance, approvingly reposted on his own account. So if Donald Trump gets rid of Kristi Noem, she, and he says he won't, even though Republicans are calling in ever-increasing numbers for her to go, he runs the risk that she is then going to say, well, if I go, Stephen Miller has to go. And this thing could go, you know, this thing rapidly spins out of control as that circular firing squad is formed by senior figures in Donald Trump's inner circle. And, James, it's worth just remembering the license to kill that senior Trump officials have given to Border Patrol and ICE agents in Minneapolis. Stephen Miller today is saying that it looks as though the Border Patrol agents may not have been following proper protocol on Saturday. The White House provided clear guidance that the extra personnel that had been sent to Minnesota for force protection should be used for conducting fugitive operations to create a physical barrier between the arrest teams and the disruptors, by which he means the protesters. We are evaluating why the Border Patrol team may not have been following that protocol. So as he prepares to basically ditch any loyalty that he was expressing over the weekend to the agents who killed Mr. Pretty in Minneapolis on Saturday, let's remind ourselves of what Stephen Miller told ICE and Border Patrol personnel earlier this month after the killing of Renee Good. Let's hear Mr. Miller.
To all ICE officers, you have federal immunity in the conduct of your duties. And anybody who lays a hand on you or tries to stop you or tries to obstruct you is committing a felony. You have immunity to perform your duties, and no one, no city official, no state official, no illegal alien, no leftist agitator or domestic insurrectionist can prevent you from fulfilling your legal obligations and duties. And
nothing in there, James, about following proper protocols. Nothing in there about being unrestrained and making sure you do everything by the book. You've got full immunity. And that was the message that the Border Patrol agents and the ICE agents who are still on the streets of Minneapolis clearly received from the man who now seems to be getting ready to try and save his own skin by turning against the Border Patrol agents who killed Mr. Pretty.
You brought all that in on time, which is an extraordinary achievement. And just because we're used to it, Simon, doesn't mean that we should be any less grateful than we usually are. I mean, does anyone get impeached, or is everything too messy even to be having a conversation that operates within the parameters of normal American politics?
Well, Democrat leaders in the House stirred themselves to life last night. Hakeem Jeffries said that if Donald Trump doesn't fire Kristi Noem, he's going to lay impeachment articles down against her and begin that proceeding. I think it is worth making the point, James, that over the weekend, protesters in New York, furious with Democratic Party leaders, protested outside the residence of Senator Chuck Schumer, the party's leader in the Senate. And, you know, I keep coming back to Senator Bernie Sanders, who several months ago was asked when Democrats up on Capitol Hill were going to get a spine and stand up to the excesses of the Trump administration. And he said to an interviewer, that's not going to happen. Any resistance to this Trump administration is going to have to come from the streets. And he was absolutely right. And the resistance to the Trump administration is coming from the streets of Minneapolis. And it's been sparked by this extraordinary character of Alex Preti, someone who was deeply critical of the Trump administration's mass deportation policies and the manner in which they were being implemented in Minneapolis, but was also a lawful gun owner here in America. And it's the bringing together of all of that, including, of course, the solidarity of Minneapolis residents determined to rid themselves of ICE and the Border Patrol. That's been the dominant driver of everything that's taken place here over the last 4 or 5 days.
And even flirting with the idea of trying to throw the Second Amendment under the bus, as the president did in those clips that you played us, gives an indication of how serious, from their point of view, this situation is. Simon Marks, live from Washington, D.C., thank you, as always. There's another story from America that I'm going to talk you through in a moment, and this involves the Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar being attacked with an unknown substance at an event that she was hosting yesterday, and we're going to look at some of the possible inspirations of the attacker, about whom at the moment very little is known. And if there's time, I also want to find out a little bit more about what has been described as the mother of all trade deals signed yesterday by India and the European Union. It's 12:47.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
First, the mega embassy, now a prime ministerial visit to Beijing. Should he be there? Hobbs say Treasury help isn't enough. The Chancellor tells graduates student loans are fair. Are they?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan and gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
At Ocado, you'll save 25% on your first shop and get free delivery. Which means if you were to buy a four-cheese pizza, you'd basically be getting one of the cheeses for free. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Geographical and other restrictions. Minimum spend £60 and charges apply. New customers only. Maximum saving £20. Terms at ocado.com.
Selling your car can be super simple if you choose We Buy Any Car, because they sort out any outstanding finance for you. Just bring along your final settlement agreement. If only they could make parallel parking simpler.
To the right a bit, mate. Yeah, back a bit. Bit more. Oh, no, too far.
We Buy Any Car. Selling made simple. To sell your car today, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. being clamped to the only N-Tax car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with James O'Brien.
10 to 1 is the time. The Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar was attacked with an unknown substance at an event she was hosting on Tuesday when an audience member used a syringe to spray liquid at her. I've found some new resolve lately when we've been pondering the question of what do you do when there's so much madness to follow with regards to US politics. How do you do it when he throws one and the answer is you just do your best. That's all you can do. So in answer to the question of how anybody might, because of course we don't know the details yet, but how anybody might have ended up harbouring such hideous ill will towards a democratically elected US politician, Ilhan Omar, here's a hint from the President of the United States in, last month.
Do we have any individuals from Somalia in the group? Please raise your hand. That's for Minnesota, you know. That's called the Great Big Minnesota Scam with one of the dumbest governors ever in history. I love this Ilhan Omar, whatever the hell her name is, with the little ching, the little turban. I love her. She comes in, does nothing but bitch. She's always complaining. She comes from a country where, I mean, it's considered about the worst country in the world, right? They have no military, they have no nothing, they have no parliament. They don't know what the hell the word parliament means. They have nothing. They have no police. They police themselves. They kill each other all the time. I love it. She comes to our country, and she's always complaining about the Constitution allows me to do this. We ought to get her the hell out. She married her brother in order to get in, right? She married her brother. Can you imagine if Donald Trump married his sister? Beautiful. She's a beautiful person. If I married my sister to get my citizenship, do you think I'd last for about 2 hours or would it be something less than that? She married her brother to get in. Therefore, she's here illegally. She should get the hell out. Throw the hell out. She does nothing but complain.
There's more.
Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. I mean, I hear the boos. How the hell did she win the primary? This woman is crazy. She's a horrible woman who hates our country. Mail-in vote. You might be right. We'll have to check that. Let's check the mail-in vote. Now, seriously, how does a woman who hates our country, who says nothing but bad things about our country and Israel and other of our allies, how does this woman win? Where are the people that would vote for her?
Rail through this. And another one.
Ilhan Omar is garbage. She's garbage. Her friends are garbage. These aren't people that work. These aren't people that say, let's go, come on, let's make this place great. These are people that do nothing but complain. They complain. And from where they came from, they got nothing. Somalians ripped off that state for billions of dollars. Billions. Every year. Billions of dollars. And they contribute nothing. The welfare is like 88%. They contribute nothing. I don't want them in our country, I'll be honest with you, okay? Somebody say, oh, that's not politically correct. I don't care. I don't want them in our country. Their country is no good for a reason. Their country stinks.
And another one.
The Somalians should be out of here. They've destroyed our country. And all they do is complain, complain, complain. You have her. She's always talking about the Constitution provides me with... go back to your own country and figure out your Constitution. All she does is complain about this country. Without this country, she would not be in very good shape. She probably wouldn't be alive right now.
Remember, it's either the racism, the misogyny, or bizarrely, the climate change denial that draws people to Donald Trump. The woman that he was profoundly obnoxious to in the clip that Simon played a few minutes ago, I should also add, Rachel Scott of ABC, is a woman of colour. And he doesn't hold back, does he?
Ilhan Omar, she comes from Somalia.
a backward country, probably the worst country. They say it's the worst country in the world, if it's a country. I don't even think it's a country. There's no organization, no anything. They don't have police. They don't have military. They don't have anything. They just have people running around, killing each other, and trying to pirate ships. But she'll come here. Comes, and then she wants to tell us how to run our country. The Constitution says that I am entitled to this. I can't stand her.
Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar was attacked with an unknown substance at an event she was hosting on Tuesday. That's just some of the things Donald Trump has said about her in the last few weeks. He's up to the challenge. I know that he is, but it is quite a challenge to squeeze into the remaining time a quick account of how big a deal the EU-India trade deal that was essentially finessed yesterday is. I don't know, Dmitry Grozobinsky, whether you are familiar with that titan of British culture, Bullseye. But often at the end of Bullseye, you would turn to the people who had failed to win a speedboat and show them a speedboat and say, have a look at what you could have won, which is why we're talking about the EU-India trade deal on this programme. So let's have a look at what we could have won.
Thank you so much, James. And as always, you give me the smoothest lead-ins. Just once I want to go on your show and have the previous segment be about a puppy that rescued a kitten.
I'm sorry. Yes, that's a fair point. Next time, I promise.
So, listen, the EU-India FTA, it looks on paper like a reasonably good deal. It's a fairly conservative deal, but I think it signals that over the last 5 years, an Indian economy, which has historically been very internally focused, very closed to the outside world, had very high barriers. In the last 5 years, there's been a sea change, and India, one of the world's most populous countries, is opening up and looking to do one free trade agreement after another. The way they did this one with the EU is, like many deals, they reduced what they were willing to live without, and they accepted some of the things the EU would need them to live with. So they basically agreed not to get significantly better access to EU agriculture, which is always sensitive. They agreed not to get exemptions from the EU's carbon border measures. And in exchange, the EU accepted that India would only have a limited amount of access for European cars and would not sort of enforce higher labor standards than they were willing to. So it's a compromise, but it looks like a reasonably good deal.
And I mean, you said that's, you being a trade expert, a reasonably good deal. In the annals of deals of this scale, where does it sit? I mean, because it's taken, according to some accounts, 20 years to reach this point.
So whenever a trade agreement takes a long time, it's not because trade negotiators are slow typers. Mm. It's because there have been immovable sort of political disagreements over what the two sides want. And in this case, they found common ground in this last time in the face of everything that is happening in the world. All governments wanting to show investors that, hey, we have alternatives to the US and, hey, we can be predictable in open markets at a time when some markets are closing, some markets are becoming less predictable. But listen, on the in the sheer number of people and businesses affected, it's huge. In terms of, like every other trade deal, it will make life a little bit better for a subsection of businesses within these countries. It's not going to transform anybody's economy, but it's a good step forward.
Dmitry Grozobinsky, always a pleasure. The author of Why Politicians Lie About Trade and What You Need to Know About It, demonstrating why not only his book is called that, but also why he was the man to write it. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. So download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
He's actually going to be with us in a minute with me talking about his experience of going to China.
Well, would you do me a favour?
Yeah.
Would you introduce him by referring to some puppies before he comes on.
In what way shall I refer to
you? Don't need
puppies?
To know.
Okay,
is that okay?
Can I trust you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. I will. So Tom will be with me in a minute to talk about the Prime Minister's trip to China. That armada, so-called, to use President Trump's word, on its way to Iran. We're going to keep a close eye on its journey. A Minneapolis human rights lawyer joins me later on. We'll talk about the package of help for pubs and what the wider hospitality sector might be feeling. Despair comes to mind. But that surveillance Keir Starmer and others can expect to be under during his China visit, Tom will tell us all about it. He kind of knows the feeling. And I want to know, should the Prime Minister be there at all?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer has told business delegates that they are making history as he kicked off a three-day visit to China. It is 8 years since a British Prime Minister travelled to the country, and he says he wants to take a more consistent approach to Beijing. But critics have warned moving closer to China could anger President Trump and risk more tariffs. One of them is Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch, who has told LBC she would not be travelling to the country if she was PM.
He is going there from a position of weakness. And it looks to me like the Labour Party's policy is for economic dependence on China. Pretty much everything Ed Miliband is doing relies on Chinese wind farms, solar farms, electric vehicles. We're not building, while deindustrialising our own economy and not building any manufacturing capacity, that is going to be terrible for our future. And we need to stop that.
Donald Trump says a massive armada is heading to Iran after a U.S. aircraft carrier group arrived in the Middle East yesterday. The U.S. president says the fleet is larger than the one the U.S. sent to Venezuela. Activists claim more than 6,000 people have been killed in a crackdown on anti-regime protests since late December. Amazon has told its staff it plans to cut around 16,000 jobs globally as part of efforts to streamline operations. The latest major round of layoffs at the online retailer come just 3 months after it cut around 14,000 roles. It's understood the majority of jobs affected will be in the US, but some roles will go in the UK too. Former Deputy Prime Minister Sir Nick Clegg has told LBC that ministers shouldn't rush into banning social media for under-16s. He says it's something the government is currently consulting on. And the first woman to become the Archbishop of Canterbury has been confirmed at a service at St Paul's Cathedral. Dame Sarah Mullally was named as Justin Welby's successor in October, with her enthronement at Canterbury Cathedral in March. She'll help lead around 85 million people in more than 165 countries. But she knows that for some in the Church of England, her gender remains a barrier they can't accept.
What I hope to do is to be able to provide a space where I can offer hospitality to people, where I can listen to what their concerns are. In a sense, find some way in which we can at least have partnership together in that way.
In the city, the FTSE 100 was trading down at 50 points at 10,157. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, bright spells and patchy cloud for most. Some showers lingering in the far northeast. The south and west may also see showers develop, a high of 10 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. Well, you heard from the Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, in the news bulletin just there, saying that she thinks the trip to China by the Prime Minister indicates that we're going to rely on China for our economic success. That probably takes things a bit too far. Keir Starmer has arrived there to a floral and smiling welcome and says the UK is, in his words, outward looking but focused on national interest. LBC's political editor Natasha Clark spoke to Chancellor Rachel Reeves yesterday about this prime ministerial trip to China. Let's see what she said.
Well, I was in China last January and managed to do deals worth hundreds of millions of pounds to support British businesses doing business and exporting to China. And I'm confident that the Prime Minister will come back with a package of measures that helps businesses in Britain, that helps jobs in Britain, because we make and produce some brilliant stuff in the UK and I want to sell it around the world, which is why we've done trade deals with India, Korea, the US. It's why we're improving trade relations with Europe. But China's the second biggest economy in the world. Big opportunities for British jobs and British businesses, and we want to seize them.
Which kind of echoes what the Prime Minister himself was saying on the plane on the way over. I'll talk to Ruby Osman in just a moment, senior geopolitical researcher at the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. She leads the Institute's work on China. But Tom Swarbrick is here a little earlier than normal, Drive presenter, as you know, on LBC, to talk about the time he was in China on a trip very much like this when he worked with the former Prime Minister Theresa May back in 2018. The surveillance that you experienced and your colleagues at the time experienced will be pretty similar to what the Prime Minister and others are experiencing right now.
Don't think they'll have changed their tactics. Afternoon, Sheila. Yes. So that was certainly one big element of the trip, and an element that the security services were keen to brief us about so that we didn't fall foul of it. The context of going was very different to the one in which Keir Starmer is going now, because Your political memory might be long enough to remember the time when David Cameron talked about a golden age with China. Xi Jinping came over on a state visit.
Had a pint with the Prime Minister of the time, David Cameron, in a pub in Oxfordshire, as I remember.
Which was then bought by a Chinese company and is subsequently folded.
Didn't know
that. A bit unfortunate. One might think it was an accident, maybe. And then Theresa May came in, and famously, as the champagne was literally on ice in the marquee tent put up to celebrate the decision around Hinkley Point C, paused it because of Chinese investment, literally as they were about to open the champagne and say, well done, everybody. Much, much more hawkish on China than David Cameron and George Osborne were. And so went into this visit with Xi Jinping in 2018 on the basis of signing a memorandum of understanding about the Belt and Road Initiative. The Belt and Road Initiative being, certainly before COVID, the biggest thing that was happening in the world. This was China's massive expansion into parts of Africa, into parts of Asia, building ports, building roads, saddling with debt these young countries, and then it subsequently turns out taking those ports back into Chinese ownership when, for instance, countries like Sri Lanka couldn't pay their debt. And the deal was May was going to sign a memorandum of understanding, 900 million to a billion quid's worth of deals. And she didn't do it. So in that sense, the trip was a complete flop.
And she didn't do it because?
Because this isn't just about economic exchange. This isn't just opening great trade routes between our two wonderful nations and aren't we all excited about global trade. This is Chinese expansionism. This is Chinese power rooted through economic expansion.
And rooted in other people's countries.
Rooted directly in other people's countries.
I mean, a few days ago, it was the mega embassy. The go-ahead has been given for that. Very controversial. Today, we have the Prime Minister there saying we are making deals. We cannot ignore one of the world's largest economies. Tell us a bit about the surveillance, because you were given very specific warnings about what to expect and what to do and what not to do.
Very specific warnings about the use of mobile phones. Do not use your own personal mobile phone unless you want the Chinese Communist Party to know who you're married to, what their number is and what you're saying. We were given burner phones for the trip. We were told about, and there was reporting at the time about getting undressed under your bedclothes if you didn't want the Chinese government to know what you look like naked, which I obviously ignored because I think nothing to hide, nothing to show. So I decided to ignore that. So the surveillance element was really obvious and has to be taken incredibly seriously.
And it wasn't just about indoors either, was it? It was outdoors as well.
Have secure conversations outdoors, go
on the
for
move.
A walk, all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
I have to say, I did raise an eyebrow when I saw the current Prime Minister, had said relations with China might make us richer, they may well do, and safer. And I did think, safer? I mean, in the sense that we can persuade the Chinese not to invade...